Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It's Wednesday. We're thrilled that you're here. We have a huge show planned for you. You can jump in, 312-981-7200. Call us or text us. Wendy, I'm glad you're here. There were some people on the staff were nervous that you might not make it in. Not me. I said, Wendy will be here.
I was making a snow angel, but I made a boy angel.
And the difference is what?
I didn't move my legs.
Would that
Very
be an
lazy.
Angelo?
Yes.
A what?
A Los Angelo.
A Los Angelo. Did you make one of those Los Angelos?
Yeah, you know how you're supposed to. I love this snow. You know why? It's not sticking on the pavement, but it's on the grassy knoll.
Right, which is usually associated with very negative things.
Yeah.
But in this particular instance, it's not.
It's pretty, and I love snow angels.
And we've been told that this snow will be gone late tomorrow because it's going to be like in the 50s tomorrow. So enjoy it while you can. It's not going to be here forever. But it looks the way December should look in the city, right? Just it stopped right now, but for
Aren't
the last hour.
Aren't you okay with this snow?
Yeah.
I mean, blizzard, I don't really want it.
I'm even good with a blizzard or two.
Once Bite your you know, tongue.
It doesn't do anything for you. A blizzard, you look out the window, you go, I'm glad I'm not out in that.
Well, yeah, but there are so many people that are out in that.
Here's my advice to those people. Stay in. Don't go out in that.
Don't you love when they say, if you don't have to drive, don't. If you don't have to go out of the house. Some of us work.
Right. Right.
And I always feel guilty when it happens over the weekend because we don't work on weekends.
Right.
Then it's like, wow, this is cool.
Right.
But a lot of people just work weekends.
It always takes, it's so true. It takes me back to when I was in grade school and it seemed like, and I've had this conversation with Tom Skilling about the shifting of the weather. It seemed like it always started snowing December 1st or 2nd. My dad used to have a Christmas party for his business the first or sometimes second week in December, and it was always snowy for the Christmas party. We never had a year that there wasn't snow. But in Chicago now, it rarely snows. We get one or two little
right.
snowbursts before Christmas, but it usually happens here now in January or February sometimes.
My soon-to-be teenager Dylan is mad at me because I woke him up this morning and said, Dilly dog,
you gotta
it
look
snowed.
At the snow.
You may have a snow day.
Yeah.
And he got up and looked and punched me.
He punched you for this?
Very lightly.
He seems violent.
I said he had a snow day. He doesn't have a snow day. It wasn't even sticking.
We always used to, we would pray for that, and we would listen to this radio station,
How
WGN,
about it?
As they would go through the barrage of schools.
They never said my school.
Mine either. I think we had in the history, I went to grade school, you'll find this shocking, for 8 years. And I think we had two or maybe three in the 8 years I went to grade school. My daughters used to have that every year, two or three.
Yeah, we never had a day
People
off.
Are soft now. The snow will melt the kids. We can't let them out in the snow.
We're so tough.
Oh, yeah. Back then?
I'm not tough at all. My son Michael is in Madrigals, and they had the most beautiful presentation last night at a church in Countryside, St. Cletus.
Mm-hmm.
Huge altar, and it was their Christmas and fanfare concert.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the orchestra and the madrigals, and they had this woman singing. She's an opera singer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
She sang Oh Holy Night, and then the court, everybody backed her up in the orchestra. I was crying.
It was emotional, yeah?
It was the most beautiful. My skin was tingling. I had so many goosebumps.
Is that good?
Oh, my God.
Or you might just have some sort of a disorder. I'm hoping that's not the case, but I'm just saying you should really see a...
It's pretty much one or the other,
see
I would
a doctor.
Think.
One, right. It could be both.
I do get hot flashes, but this was a tingly flash.
Does your head itch ever?
No.
It could be eczema.
Just wondering.
I'll call Big Lou.
Big Lou can help you.
His head itches, too.
Now, madrigal singing, this is when they sing in rounds, right? Is that what that is? Is that what madrigal
no,
is?
No, that's a barbershop quartet.
Barbershop quartet? All right.
This is when they dress like they're medieval, right?
Oh, that's what it is.
Well, madrigals are just various, like you have your alto singers, your tenors, your sopranos. Not Tony.
Oh, that would be sad.
Carmella was there, though.
But here's what I remember. I watched a show once where they had madrigal singers on, and here's what they did. And maybe they did this back in madrigal times. I don't know when madrigal times were, but they would when they were singing, they would look to the left for a little bit, and then they would look to the right for a little bit, and then to the left for a little bit, and then to the right. And I don't what they wouldn't look straight ahead. What's with that?
I don't know, but they're not supposed to smile. And Michael can't help himself, so because he loves to sing.
That's what sang King Arthur when he opened up the Madrigal Kingdom. No one went because no one smiled.
Right. Smile and look at us, you Madrigal singers.
Hey, his little Madrigal group that he's in, which isn't so little, they're going to Ireland for
that's great.
St. Patrick's Day to sing at all the famous churches in Ireland.
That's fantastic.
Maybe next year I can hook something up with the Steve Bertrand Travel.
I don't know why you would wait till next year.
Because it's already booked.
Really?
Oh. But is this a competition?
In Ireland, no, they're just going to perform. There are competitions.
Wow.
But it was just so unbelievably beautiful. And then being in a church, it just, you know, the acoustics were gorgeous. I stayed for both shows.
Oh, it's that good.
It was so unbelievable.
I love that music, Wendy.
Oh, my God. And then this is the best part.
Huh.
We got to sing.
Who got to
the
sing?
The audience.
Everyone got
Christmas
to sing.
Christmas carols.
Oh, that's not bad.
We sang Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and we sang...
Jake Arrieta song?
No.
Still popular, by the way.
Just in time for Christmas.
You know, when you were on vacation, he won the Cy Young Award, so we played it.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
And boy, were the texts coming in.
Can I give you a sample text? Mm-hmm. Enough of this already. Was that what they were saying?
There were one or two of those, but mostly it was like, I just got this song out of my head.
When you were allowed to sing at this presentation, were you allowed to smile? Or is there some kind of a no-smile ban in the hall there where no one's allowed to smile when singing Christmas songs?
No, we were smiling when we were singing Christmas songs. But when the actual choir is singing, they're supposed to be very somber. And I think the fact that they were in church was making them feel that way
maybe.
As well. But, oh, my God, one of the ladies who conducts, there's a guy and a woman, several teachers that are all part of this. And they practice. Michael has to be at school at 6:50, 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And they practice so much for this, but I swear to God, it is the best thing watching this woman. It's like she's Cabbage Patch dancing. She is so into
it.
It was really just a wonderful, touching night.
Here's what's strange. When my daughters were in grade school, every year they would do a Christmas pageant at the school, and it was a long, long evening. And, you know, every parent goes to see their kids. And then you see the kids of friends of yours, and that's cool. But, you know, the first graders and the second graders. I never left.
Okay,
I never left.
Because I didn't either.
But, boy, those shows, they just went on forever. And every year as it would approach, I'd say to Terry, is there some way I can get out of this? I want to see our kids, but I don't want to spend 2.5 hours watching every class comes in and does something.
First of all, no one says that out loud, Bill.
I said it out loud.
You just go.
Well, she said, it's so weird because you're so proud when your old kid is up there, but then... Like when my kids were in second grade, then I knew the next 95 minutes were going to be third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders that I didn't know, you know, doing scenes from, Christmas shows. But now I miss it tremendously. Now that they're not doing it anymore, I would even say to Terry, we should go see what's going on at the school. The Christmas show is coming up. We should go watch that.
Next Thursday, Michael has another Madrigal concert at another church.
I got something Thursday.
I can't believe the talent that these kids in high school have.
Shocking.
I mean, from when I went to high school, seriously.
You know why? Because of The Voice. Kids watch The Voice and they say, I want to be like that. So they try a little harder than they used to. We didn't have The Voice when we were kids.
But the orchestra, I mean, this is like watching the CSO.
Is it that good?
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Usually when you watch a school, I know by high school you've kind of perfected your craft a little bit.
Right.
But you're kind of used to every once in a while hearing a sour note happen.
Oh, yeah.
Not once.
Everything's in place. That's the way it should be.
I am
be.
Covered in goosebumps.
You still have the goosebumps. I think it's eczema. I really do. You should see a doctor.
You're so mean.
You should see a doctor.
I thought you were Christmas boy.
I am Christmas boy. I am Christmas boy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we have more show ahead. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Hey, guess what? I've done something stupid.
Who'd you ask to do a Yoko Ono impression?
Oh, I didn't do anything that stupid.
That's
reserved for a very special branch of stupid. No, I did something just normal stupid. You've been to the house, so you know that what would be our garage.
Yes.
When the house was built 1,000 years ago in 1920, whatever, they built a garage behind the house. And when we moved in, we decided it would be nice to have a garage, but we could turn that into a family room. So it's separate from our house.
It's not really a family room.
Well,
you have really taken it over.
I'm part of the family. I mean, a lot of the stuff in there is my stuff. It's a lot of my weight equipment, and there's toys and stuff, and there's a TV, there's a ping pong table. But it's a lot of the things you'd find in a family room, right?
If you were you.
If you were me. So you the way our house is situated is we have the house, and then you can go out the back door and walk down a little lane, and then 12 steps later,
Penny
you're
Lane.
In. It's Penny Lane because I'm a Beatles fan. Then you're in the family room, what used to be the garage. So I was in there a lot over the weekend.
Decorating.
Decorating a little bit, making it look nice. And somehow I lost the key, or I should say keys, because we have two keys to that room. And wisely, I keep them on the same keychain, which when you stop and think about it, you say to yourself,
stupid,
you'd be better served to put them on two separate keychains in case one was ever lost. But for some reason, I never did that. I spent about 3 hours yesterday covering all my steps of everywhere I've been since Friday or Saturday, I guess was the last time I was in there. They're gone. They're completely gone. How do I get in there now? Do I have to get a locksmith? Does a locksmith have the ability? Do they have like a master key that will open
No.
that?
You should have kept the electric garage door.
Oh, I should have. Well,
right?
It's still there, Steve, but you have to operate it from the inside. Like, we don't have one of those car clips that you can just press on your car
Why?
To open it up. Because we never park in there. In all the years we've lived there, we only parked in there once. There was a terrible hailstorm, so we moved the car.
Hail yes.
Hail yes.
This exact thing happened to my friend Camille. She was house-sitting for her sister,
yeah.
And she locked the keys to the house in the garage, and the garage was locked. So she called me, I don't know why, and I took the doorknob off.
But how, I don't know how would you take
a screwdriver?
Oh, it's not set up for that. It's a deadbolt lock on there. Like, could a regular, I'm trying to think of how you could possibly get in.
An axe?
It's got to be... An axe would work. All right. I'll just take an axe to the door.
Is there a chimney?
There is no chimney.
You have a chimney in your garage?
I was just asking a question.
I don't have a chimney.
Who has a chimney in your garage? Unless it's a connected garage.
Some people might. I don't know. I'm
not sure. You have to pay extra for that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's zoning laws.
You do pay extra for a chimney in your garage.
You just...
But a locksmith could do that, right?
Well, yeah. A locksmith could open it, but they don't have a master key. They just... You know, if you watch The Walking Dead, you could get Eugene, who you say looks like my husband. So Jimmy Mac can just come over and I can pick a lock.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In last week's episode. All right. Maybe I'll do that.
That's my specialty. What did he say? That's my skill set.
But the worst thing is knowing when you, like, I like when it could be anyone in the family who has followed this up. I like that scenario much better because then you can spend some of the time going, this could be your fault. This could
right,
be your
the
fault.
The blame game.
This is all my fault. I was the one that was in there. I took the keys. I've looked through every clothing piece that I've worn.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe I put it in a pocket.
Because you do wear cargo shorts. There are a lot of pockets. You look through all of them?
Every one of them.
What are the keys that are on your desk?
Are there keys on my desk?
You didn't see those?
No.
Everywhere. Every stone overturned.
There's a key ring with two keys sitting on your desk.
Are you serious?
No.
Come on.
I got him!
That's not funny.
That's worse than telling her kid he's got a snow day.
It is, isn't it?
I am prankish
you're
today.
You're kicking people when they're down.
She
that's
wonders
not
why
right.
I write those texts about her.
I've called up businesses. I spent last night calling up businesses that I was in on Saturday saying, did anyone hand in
did
two
any
silver
dumbass?
Keys? I didn't say that. I said, any concerned citizen come in and replace? Did anybody like that come in? I don't know. You can
recognize it because both keys are exactly the same.
Right. Steve, that's the dumbest part of this is every single time over the last 11 years that I've reached for those, I go, I should probably put one of those keys on a different keychain in case something like this happens every single time.
It's like a Bob Newhart. Yeah, two keys. Right. Yeah. No, the one look. Yeah, exactly the same. Exactly. Uh-huh.
It's not dumb.
Do you have to get in there like today? Because people are texting and saying... They'll turn up.
Can I tell you something? Every time I lose something and my wife says, stop. And first of all, let me sidestep the story for a second. Anytime I've lost anything over the last 5 years, it's always in the same place. It's in that crease next to my driver's seat.
Yes.
Everything I lose.
But you weren't in the car when you opened the door and you'd know to look there. You look there, right?
I've driven in the car many times since. So I thought maybe they were in a jacket pocket and fell in between that crease. They're not in the crease.
Didn't you lose Reese one time in that crease?
Reese was in the crease. That's where we found her. She was in there.
What you need to do is hurry before the ground freezes and plant a statue of some saint upside down.
All right, here's the other
Anthony.
Suggestion. Yeah, someone said pray to Saint Anthony.
Saint Anthony laughs at me. He won't have
him
anything
again.
Right, this guy.
I got no time.
Is it Two Key Bill? Yeah, that's what St. Anthony says. That's his quote from St. Anthony.
Did you maybe throw them away? Because this has happened to me, too, where you look through the garbage for something. It's disgusting, but a lot of times things... I threw out a fork once because it was on a paper plate, and I just was cleaning up the counter, and I'm like... Did I just do what I think
You went through
I did?
The garbage just to find a fork? You love your forks way more than I do. I just go, we got to get a new fork.
That's such a good story,
It's a
Wendy.
Matching set.
I know, but I wouldn't go through the garbage for it.
Why not?
I'd get a new set
You know,
set
there's
of
something
fork.
Called soap.
I know.
Jeez.
I know.
Have you ever misplaced something and found it in the fridge, says 773, and I have.
No, not in the refrigerator, but I always put stuff
on top
of the refrigerator. So I did look there.
Is there a window in the garage?
Yeah, there's a window, but it's you'd have to break the window, and it's so small, I couldn't get through the window.
No, you don't have to break the window. Can't you open the window again? Someone suggested, take the hinges off the door.
Right.
Ask Wendy how. Because really, you can do that.
I don't think these come off
because they're special... Not come off hinges? What are you saying?
Take the hinges off from the outside.
I don't think you could do it from the outside.
The inside.
All the hardware's on there. Well, I know, but there's my problem.
There you go. Another problem solved by Wendy.
I mean, are they locked in there?
No, they can't be because you lock that door from the outside.
Okay.
And you unlock this door with the key to imagination. Quote from Rod Serling. I'm going to have to sell the house. We're going to have to move.
Are they on the margarita machine?
No.
Did you look there?
The margarita machine is no longer in service. Long story. Can't go into it now.
That's
sad story.
Sad.
It's a sad story, but that's out of service.
You put them somewhere just like...
But Terry always says, like what you started to say before, they'll turn up, but whenever she says
that... She does not panic about anything,
nothing.
Does she?
Zero. I could be on fire and she'll go, it'll put itself out. Come on. It's just a smolder. It's going to go away.
She does love you.
She must love me. All right, a quick break. We've got the news, and then Dr. John Duffy joins us. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Bill, the holidays are coming, and people are starting to stress out. People who lock their keys in their garage, and...
Some of those people, geniuses, just had a lapse of memory. I don't understand it myself, but...
But really, with the holidays
come
complaining stress and a lot of sadness, too. I was talking about Michael's Madrigal last night at St. Cletus in Countryside. And as I'm sitting there, it's obviously a church, so it touches you spiritually. The music was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I thought back, back when I was growing up and we went to church on a regular basis, my grandma and the rest of my family would go to St. Cletus, one of the few churches in the area that had a 5 o'clock mass.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why I had some tears in my eyes,
I think,
too.
Sure, it's nostalgic.
Very emotional time, the holidays.
Yeah.
So with us in the studio, Dr. John Duffy. He's a clinical psychologist, best-selling author, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert.
WWE champion. A couple of times. I see him.
I'm looking for Rousey.
You'll take care of Rousey.
You would hit a woman?
Rousey. No.
There's no way. Are you kidding?
No.
Her, though, you could. She'd welcome it.
I would never get a hit in, even if I were up for it.
She has actually said, I know this is the reason we brought you here, but she says, I'll never fight a guy because it would be weird to have people in a room cheering for a man hitting a woman, and I don't want that to happen.
That's
so
actually
she won't
a
fight
really,
a guy.
That would be incredibly dissonant, wouldn't
it?
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, Dr. John Duffy is here, and it is such an emotional time, the holidays, good, bad, and otherwise.
Right, and we forget the bad and otherwise sometimes. So we have this demand on ourselves, like this is supposed to be Rockwellian, right? And if you look into Rockwell's life, it wasn't always so idyllic, but we think it's supposed to be this Curry and Ives portrait of this beautiful, idyllic holiday life. And it usually doesn't work that way. So we've got to take some of the demand off ourselves that this be like perfect and excellent because it is an emotional time. I was working with a man this week who loves the holidays so much, but in the last couple of years, he lost both his parents and his brother. Right around this time of year. And so this is a really sad time for him. And he thought, well, I'm just going to gut through it. And my press with him was, no, experience what you experience. Whatever you experience is legitimate, and sometimes it's sad. I think sometimes, like, this is a really poignant time of year, especially if you've lost something or if it's been particularly difficult. People take stock. I mean, it's kind of this arbitrary end of something. And I think we look back and we think, how did this year go? Was this great for me? Did I have some losses? Do I hope 2016 is different than 2015? And I don't mind that. But in order to do that, you have to take away the perfectionism of the holidays.
So no one is perfect.
And nobody's perfect.
The family that says they're perfect, or the illusion that they give out that they're perfect, there's something inside going on in their house.
I have to say, the luxury of a job like mine, and it is a luxury, is you realize nobody's perfect, because the people you think are perfect sometimes are sitting right across from me and they're struggling the most, you know? And holding up that perfect lens is real stressful. You know what I mean? To seem perfect to the rest of the world when you're having these internal struggles and you have that idea of, like, you know, outside this house, we're not going to talk about any of our difficulties. That is trying. You know what I mean? That's easier than saying, you know what? We've had a really tough year and we could use some help. A little potluck for us would be great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The first few years after my mom died, Christmas was one of the hardest times, especially Christmas Eve, because I would look over at where she used to sit all the time when we were all opening presents, and the first two or three years were just awful, just thinking about her not being there. And then there was like a switch that I go, instead of focusing on how much I miss her, think about all the hundreds and thousands of happy memories I have at her Christmas. Made all the difference.
That's what a great shift, right? A little paradigm shift, like, changes everything, right? So you can honor her memory by enjoying the time.
Yep.
You know, which
but
is
he
not
had
what
to
most
get
of us
to
thinks.
That point, right? That's not something that switch doesn't flip at the same time for everyone.
No, it doesn't. And in fact, a lot of times in the wake of somebody's death, I don't know if you've heard this theory of an empty chair.
Yeah.
At a Thanksgiving table or at you know, opening gifts at Christmas. But, you know, like, sometimes just to honor somebody who's not there anymore, you hold this chair empty and you kind of take a moment. But I think there's a difference between taking a moment and letting it kind of color negatively the entire holiday season.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that becomes something that then just feels awful for everybody. Nobody really gets to enjoy any of it.
Yeah.
And you're modeling something for your kids about how this time of year is supposed to be that you probably don't want to model.
Yeah. So true.
I was talking to a friend of mine who was telling me about positive psychology, and there's a man responsible for it, and you're probably aware of him, Dr. Seligman.
Yes, Marty.
Yes. I knew you knew. It was really interesting. I was talking to our friend and neighbor, John, and he said, you know, for so many years we're trying to figure out what's wrong with someone and fixing it, and that's great.
Right.
But then take people who are functioning properly and find out what they're doing right. It was fascinating to me. And you're much like that.
Yes.
And, you know, my sons talk to you. You're their therapist. And that's the approach you take. It's not, you know, you've really puffed them up. that's so important, because as a parent, I bring them down a lot.
Well, I think we do that a lot as parents, right? We have expectations of our kids, and we forget, because there's a lot of anxiety around parenting kids, especially our kids' age, all of us, right? We all have kids who are teenagers and older.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are certain demands that they have to meet, and we get anxious about, like, whether they're going to do that. And so we find ourselves lecturing, and we lose sight of what's amazing about our kids, what's really going to work for them in the long run, right? Even in the short run. And so I've always loved Seligman's work and this idea of positive psychology. Just the phrase itself suggests, like, look at your kid in a different way, right? Look for the positives. And so when I work with a family, even in crisis, I usually lead with, like, you know, tell me the greatest thing about your kid. What works well? And parents are like, well, I really want to get to what the problems are, but I'll humor you. when in the end, that's really the stuff that you want to build on. You don't necessarily want to spend your time focusing on what's not working. You want to build on what is. You know, that's a big part of parenting.
Right.
That we miss sometimes.
And I bet parents, even though they're humoring you for a little bit, going, let's fix what's broken and not worry about, I bet they kind of have a glow to them when they do spend those moments focusing on the good things, don't they?
Brilliant, Bill. Yes. I mean, it shifts the whole tenor of a session when I ask parents to tell me the great things about their kids.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is to watch the child, because almost every single time I'm able to ask that kid, did you know your mom or your dad felt that way? And usually they say, no, I can't believe it. I feel like they're just buttering me up or something.
Yeah.
And the parents are usually weepy, you know, like, you know, really, really heartfelt. So it really kind of reconfigures a session and relationships, you know, so that we can approach everything in a different way, in a more productive, positive way. And the crisis falls away fast.
Does it?
Yeah.
My mom was a wonderful woman, and she was a tough woman, and she taught me that. You know, she lost her husband young, so she had to survive on her own. And, you know, unfortunately for my husband, Jim, I'm a kind of a tough woman, too, because that's what I knew. It was a very, you know, strong woman family.
Yeah.
And she was very critical of me in a way that she was just trying to make me better. But I resented that a lot, and it was funny because I would run into people that said, oh, my God, your mom brags about you all the time. And it's like, how about a little for me? Give me a little something.
Right. That is something that we parents could do more of, right? Because we tend to save all the criticism for our kids. And you hear all these great things from the outside. And the kids do often wonder, like, what's the deal? Why aren't my parents saying nice things to me about me, right? And I think that's an important thing to kind of round out our relationships with our kids. I think it's okay to be critical. I think it's really important to have a high bar and a lot of expectations of your kids.
Because
if you lower your bar, they'll drop theirs too. But to let them know, like, hey, here's what I really love about you. Wendy, you're good at that, by the way. You're good at saying, you know, here's what's really cool and unique about you. And I know I'm hard on you sometimes, you know, and I think that balance helps a lot and gives kids a rudder that they can work with.
There's a story, and you know who Norman Lear is, the creator of All in the Family and so many other great shows. Wendy and I had him on. He wrote a book, and I read the book a few weeks ago. He tells the story in his book about the TV Hall of Fame on their first induction ceremony picked him. He was one of seven people, Milton Berle and a couple of other big names, to be in the TV Hall of Fame. And he was so excited, and he called his mom, and he told the story, and then there's silence on the other end of the phone, and she goes, eventually, well, if that's what they want to do, who am I to say? You know, and I thought that story was so perfect.
No,
because everybody can relate to that, where you tell your parents something that you think is the best thing in the world, and they're like, oh, if that's what makes you happy.
Right, right. It's amazing how deflating we can be as parents when we're not very aware of the power of our words, right?
And
you know
we
what
don't
mean
to be all the time.
Right.
Sometimes we do.
Right, 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 right. And you, Mrs. Lear, who must have been a wonderful woman, because Norman Lear was a genius, probably meant good things by that. Like, you know, hey, I think you can do more. You know, All in the Family is nice, but there's always something else. Yeah, there's always something else.
Yep.
And something you had mentioned earlier, and then we're going to take a quick break, and we have some callers for you. 312-981-7200. We've got Dr. John Duffy in the studio. I was constantly lecturing my teenager. He would take showers in the morning, and granted, great, he's taking a shower, wants to look good for school, but, you know, Michael, you can't take a 45-minute shower in the morning or get up 45 minutes earlier.
Right.
It's just either a quick shower. So he's been late every day, and I said, if I was your first period teacher, I would flunk you. He goes, but I'm doing okay. I said, I don't care. That's showing disrespect.
Right.
And so Jim and I, every morning, it's like, come on, the bell's going to ring. And Michael's like, yeah, I'm coming. But, you know, he doesn't. So finally, I was so sick of lecturing and getting stressed out about it that I said, you know what? You're thinking about going away to college, maybe Belmont University in Nashville. That's all well and good. But, you know, right now, Dad and I don't trust that you're going to make it to your classes on time. So until you can prove to us that you can make it on your own on time, maybe, you know, COD's looking good. Not that anything's wrong with COD.
No, right.
But he wants to go to Nashville. So I think that made more sense to him than me just going, come on, come on. Well, you're going to be late.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
put it in his court.
I like the leverage of that. I like giving him the power and saying, well, you know, I had a dad in my office recently who said, whose son was underperforming in school. And he said, you know, I really love you. I think you're a really capable guy. Right now, you're not the best investment to send away to school. Mm. He kind of removed himself, you know, and said, you know, just pragmatically speaking, you're the best. But unless you perform a little bit, I'm not willing to drop that $20,000 or $30,000 investment a semester on you just hanging out and being late for that first class in the morning. So, you know, I think that's a completely reasonable thing to do. And kids can wrap their brain around that. I'm not surprised that Michael can kind of get that.
Yep.
He's been on time since I said it that way.
Ah,
how about
that? Very nice. Very nice. Dr. John Duffy's here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. People are on hold. Stay there. We'll get to your questions next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Walker.
Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us, clinical psychologist. He's an author. The Available Parent is a great book that I really need to, we all need to be better parents. It never stops, does it, John?
It never stops. No, I mean, parenting is a lifetime sentence in a good way, I think.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we're always parenting. And, you know, even when our kids, you know, my mom still parents me on the way here. I was parented a little bit about
you.
Like,
were.
Yeah, well, yeah. I hope you do a good job on the radio this morning. You know?
Did she lick her hand and move your hair back over your ears a little bit?
If we were together, I think she might have taken that tack.
All right.
All right. Well, we have some listeners every time you join us. 312-981-7200. People have some questions and concerns. And let's start out with listener Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to ask, I'm in a bit of a fog. My wife passed away Thanksgiving night.
Oh, so sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. And so I have kids in college, and, you know, we had to send them back to school on Sunday because they have, it's like the last 3 weeks of the semester and finals and stuff. And it just would have put them, I felt if we kept them home, it just would have put them in the weeds. And we're calling each other every day and checking on each other and texting each other. But, you know, sometimes trying to get your kids to open up if something is bugging them, I mean, it's really like pulling teeth. So I was wondering if you know, what do I look for when they're calling and they're not, you know, they're just calling to say hi? What kind of question, I mean, can you suggest questions to try to get them to open up and share a little bit and make sure they're okay? Because it's so hard because we're all separated now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Bill, first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss and so recent and on such a tough day to lose your wife. So my deepest condolences there. And just listening to your demeanor, I suspect that the way you are with your kids probably gives them license and permission to talk about what they're going through. So kudos to you for that, because I think that's the first step. And it might be good, and you, maybe you've already been here already, to say, you know, I've never been here before, so I don't know exactly how to do this. And so I think, given that we're all adults here, maybe we can all kind of go through this together. And I can't read your minds, just like you can't read mine. So let me know once in a while how you're doing and how you're feeling. Let me know that you're okay, because I'm not great at gauging that. And, you know, that's something we're going to have to work on together. And I would be kind of meta about that and talk about how you relate and what would give you some comfort in knowing, you know, because I hear your point that if they're not real forthcoming, and a lot of kids aren't, and, you know, and they may be kind of about their lives to some extent, but they've gone through this very traumatic loss as well. And I think you bring up a good point that, you know, they need to talk. The other option is that every college campus that I'm aware of has like a student counseling center. So if you feel
I've already set up for them. I mean, I you know, and they have all their friends down there. And so I think the outside family support, and I have a lot of support here from our friends. And excuse me.
No, this is so hard for you. And maybe they can put that out of their mind for a while to finish up school and process it later. I think when they come home for the holiday break is where you may get more conversation from them. John, would you?
That was my hope. They'll be home for a month and 3 weeks. But you know what? That's a great suggestion. Just level with them and just say, hey, listen, you know, we all got to, you know, help each other out here, and you know, yeah, you know, that's a great suggestion. Just level with them and say, you know, you need to kind of take on some of the responsibility of opening up to me, because, you know, I'm struggling with getting you to open up.
And you're struggling yourself.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I can tell, Bill, first of all, I think you're bringing the right vibe to your kids. And I think that's the next step is, hey, level with me. Let me know what's going on. The other thing that might give your kids some comfort is knowing that you are okay and that you're taking care of yourself. Because I can imagine college age kids, they're very aware, even if they're not saying it. And they might be very concerned about you and how you're doing. So if they knew...
I do. I mean, you know, we're communicating five times a day, and we're, you know, and I tell them what I'm doing, And, you know, and I keep reminding them of that there's a lot of beauty in the passing of their mother. You know, we all have time to say goodbye. And I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Not at all.
You've got us crying in the studio, too. Just so sad for you, Bill. We really are.
All right. Well, thank you for the great advice. Bill and Wendy, I listen to you every morning. And you guys are like my morning friends as I'm driving to work. And so thanks for the advice. I will level with them, and I will let them know I'm doing good, but I'm also a little vulnerable. So, you know, we're kind of on a equal, you know, field here.
And as my Bill, not I don't own him, but, you know.
You tried to.
Radio Bill
you
said,
put in a bid.
You know, it's like all of a sudden a switch will turn. And, Bill, if I can just say that hole in your heart will be filled with, like, some really wonderful memories. It's just going to take some time.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's a process. And you know, I get that. And, you know, we're not the only family to go through this. And you know, I know there's, you know, brighter days ahead. You know, it's just, it's just the clock. You know, in this situation, we always dread time passing. But, you know, especially as we get older. But in this situation, you know.
We wish we could rip the calendar pages away for you and make it go quicker.
Bill,
that would also be cheating, so.
Do what you need to do to get through it.
You know.
Good luck, Bill.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
That is just too much. And we need to continue this after the news. Can you stay?
Absolutely.
If you're on hold, stay there. We will get to as many of your calls and texts as we can. We're at 312-981-7200. Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. Dr. John Duffy is with us. His book is called The Available Parent. His website, drjohnduffy.com. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. There is an open line right now, but everybody else has a bunch of questions for you, John.
Okay. All right. Who shall we start with? This is a great one. We were talking about the holidays and another Bill, listener Bill. Hi, Bill. This is Dr. John Duffy.
Hello there.
You had a question for Dr. Duffy?
Yes, I do. I have two adult children, 35 and 36 years old, and it seems like every time our family gets together, they can't get along. And over Thanksgiving, they had a big blowout, and now they're pitting my wife and I and bringing us into the middle of it. And they said we also have grandchildren with all of them, and every time this goes on, now, you know, every time we have a get-together, they have a blowout. And now they're pitting my wife and I. If you see him, you're not going to see me. Or if you see her, you're not going to see me. Is there something that we can do to try to curtail this behavior and get them on the right track?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because you've got these adult children, Bill, but and it's particularly tough because these things tend to arise at the holidays, and you're given this ultimatum and they're in all this conflict. One thing that occurs to me immediately is even though these family situations tend to arise around Thanksgiving, around Christmas, maybe on those days, if you think about it, those days, emotions are heightened. They're probably the worst days of the year to try to manage conflict. So my immediate bias is, well, pick a different time. And I would encourage them, like as Christmas approaches or whatever your next holiday is, pick a different time and let's talk through this crisis sometime when we are not expecting something wonderful, you know? That would be my first inclination. The other is your question of, you know, is there anything I can do to really stop this? Not really. These are adults. The best you can do is let them know what the impact is on you and on the family. Like, you know, this is really trying for us. We don't look forward to the holidays the way we'd like to. So we'd really like you two to work on this. And we'd rather you didn't do it at the Thanksgiving table because nothing good is going to happen at that moment. And, you know, and I'm keenly aware of it because I can imagine that if we were sitting here talking the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, you might have been able to predict that something negative was going to happen between the two of them at that time. So my bias for you would be to stem that tide and to encourage them to work through that conflict some other time of the year, even if it means, you know, early in January. And if you're interested and you're up for it, I would even offer to be present for that conflict if you feel like it has something to do with you or the family at large. But I think the important thing is that this is the wrong time of year to try to resolve something. You know, this is the time of year to kind of be together as much as you can and to put some of those differences aside, even if they're really profound, you know. And ultimatums do not work perfectly well at Christmas or at Thanksgiving.
The thing of it is my daughter and my son, they're the ones making the ultimatum. My wife and I, you know, we try to stay out of it. We've tried to get them to work together to try to, you know, it's a couple hours out of their life, three or four times a year, you know, and we've gone at it at that aspect too. And it just, I don't know, it's very frustrating and it's hurtful.
Yeah, I can tell.
Because we want to see our grandchildren. We were really looking forward to Christmas, and we don't even know if we're going to have Christmas.
Yep, no, I totally understand. And maybe it would be useful in these weeks beforehand to have a talk with them and let them know what it is you want out of Christmas and kind of focus on the positives and see if they won't be willing to rise to that occasion. And it might be important for you and your wife to be clear about what's okay with you, what you're willing to be party to and what you're not. Because if I hear you right, nobody's really setting a really clear boundary about what's acceptable and what's not, even if their gripe is legitimate. So it might be useful for the two of you to say, well, here's what we're willing to do. We're willing to entertain an event where we all get together for Christmas for a few hours. We really want to do that. We want to enjoy you. We want to enjoy our grandkids. But if it's going to be the same old thing, we're not willing to entertain that.
Okay.
And that at least gives you some clarity and gets you out of the crisis of it.
Good luck to you, Bill. This is a tough situation.
I mean, it's really getting old because it happens every time they're together, every time we have a family function, and, you know, we didn't raise our children that way. I don't know why they're doing this. I'm at a loss, and it's really heartbreaking because we do want to see our grandchildren. We want to be with our family. Both my wife and I, when we were growing up, we really didn't have great family. You know, our parents were always busy, or they were doing other things, and it wasn't family time very much. And myself and my wife, we feel that it's very important to have family time. So,
boy, I get it. Especially in light of your experiences with your families, you want to create something that's positive. So I think what might be the most positive thing you can do is to say, you know, I get that you guys have a conflict, but we're not willing to be party to it in the few times we get together. And you might find if they're willing to seek just, you know, a couple of sessions of counseling together, which I'm guessing they're going to be reluctant to, but you might use your leverage as a father to press that they might find that their differences aren't as profound as you might have thought. Because I got to tell you, I've dealt with situations like this a lot. And when it comes down to it, usually these are ancient conflicts that can be managed in just a couple of hours of focused work. But now would be not the time to do it. Does that make sense?
Yep. So what we need to do is start working on getting a time together for them to maybe go get some counseling after the holidays and work on this.
I'm with you 100% on that, Bill. That makes perfect sense.
Good luck, Bill. We hope this works out.
And you can go to drjohnduffy.com and find out about his books and how to contact him. We're going to take a quick break, and then we have some more callers. We're going to do our best to get to most of them. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Dr. John Duffy with us. You can go to his website, drjohnduffy.com. His book, The Available Parent, is awesome. It's helped many a family, including my own. I want to go back, and if you're just tuning in, we had actually, we're only accepting callers named Bill
today.
That's
the way it should be.
And the first Bill who called in, very tragic tale, who lost his wife on Thanksgiving just last week.
A week ago, right. Yeah.
So it's very fresh. And he wanted to know his kids were adjusting very well. And Dr. Duffy said, you know, maybe try this. Maybe say, you know, I've not experienced this before. I don't know where I'm going with this. Let's, you know, navigate this and work it out. Great advice. I have a question, though, because I know some people who might think that a parent that would show weakness to say, you know, the parent, I've never experienced this before. Let's learn together.
Yeah.
Some people in the old school, our parents were like this. Mine were, at least. It's like you don't question the parent. You do as I say, not as I do. It shows weakness. Does it?
I'm going to argue no. And I get it. Like my parents were like that a generation ago too. They were protective. They wanted to be right most of the time. I think it's really important now. Kids are really smart and savvy now. Mm-hmm. And it's really important now to let your kids know, like, I'm not always perfect. I don't necessarily know how to navigate this. So let's do this together. First of all, I think it brings parents and kids together. But it's also a good model for kids that, you know, like, you don't have to be perfect, you
right.
know, so it takes some of that pressure off of, you know, this perfectionism that's kind of pervasive in the culture.
That's ruining the families. Everybody's stupid vision of perfectionism, because what's perfect and
right.
who's perfect?
Right, right. No, and behind every door are flaws, you know, and I think it's really important. It's a privilege of my profession to recognize that. And in the flaws is something amazing, you know, about families. It's actually what, like, the true nature of a family is. It's not always in, like, this perfect image that we present to the world. It's in, like, here's where we struggle, you know? And that's when you really get to know people, is like, here's where I struggle. This is what I'm working on. I'm really working hard to work through it. That's where you find, like, courage in people.
Sure,
that's where you find what they're really made of, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
We had a listener, Sue, who hung up because her name wasn't Bill, and she knew that we would not take that call.
Not a
nope.
chance.
And she wanted to know what the best way is to get the family together to go to counseling. Maybe one parent thinks, you know, I'm going to discuss situations with my kid. Another parent is old school and, you know, you will do as I say.
Right.
How do you make you can't make a family go, but how do you get that to go if maybe there's a reluctant party?
And there's almost always a reluctant party, you know, so I deal with this virtually every day. And first is to recognize, I know this isn't something you want to do, but I think this is a good thing for our family. And to not necessarily, a lot of people think therapy is going to take a lifetime and they're going to have to bare their souls to this stranger that they don't know. It's an unknown quantity to
right.
a lot of people. So to recognize, you know what, I know this is really anxiety provoking. Let's try it. So a lot of people say, we're going to therapy and we are going to kind of follow through with what this person says no matter what.
Right.
My bias is always, let's try it for a couple of sessions and see if we don't get something out of it. Good therapists will help you get something out of it right away, where it feels different, where you look at your family a little bit differently. So,
mm-hmm.
so my bias is usually, if you're struggling, get your family in the room one time. You know, just as an experiment, like, well, we've never done this before. Let's see what this is like. And without a mandate that we're going to be doing this for years on end, and this is going to be some kind of deep psychoanalytic, you know, look into our family, but let's try it and see if we don't get something out of it. Almost always you do. It usually feels better than you think, not worse.
Right. Another quick holiday question for you.
Yeah.
During the break there, during Steve's news, we were all telling stories of families that we know who haven't maybe spoken to each other in years or decades even sometimes.
I don't get that.
But I do get that, because this is what always plays in my head. Just because you're of the same bloodline doesn't mean that you see eye to eye on stuff.
Right.
I understand there's conflicts within a family where you say to yourself, why do I need to waste any time in my life spending time with that particular brother or sister?
Because it's your blood. It is your blood. And no one's going to see eye to eye. You and I don't see eye to eye
right.
on things.
Right.
You don't just say, I'm not talking to her again.
Well, it would make the show awkward, right? I mean, it's a talk show.
Some dead air, I would
right,
guess.
There'd be
yes.
a lot of dead air.
Answer no.
But I always say to myself, if you only get 70 plus years on the planet,
right.
why would I waste any time spending time with somebody who I don't like and they don't like me?
And the answer to that is, you're carrying it around anyway. You know,
yeah.
like a lot of people kid themselves, like, you know, oh, I couldn't care less about my family of origin. I choose my family through my friends. And I think you can do that to some extent.
Yeah.
But your family is still your family. And if you're not talking to them, there's a reason.
Yeah.
And a lot of people fool themselves into thinking, I've liberated myself from my family. I've yet to meet that person. You know, I've known a lot of people. I've yet to meet the person who really liberated themselves from the upset and the angst that they experienced with their family. So going back and resolving some of those things, especially if they're old, you know, can
if
be...
If the problems are old or if the family members are old.
Both.
Which,
both. Yeah. But, you know, to go back and revisit things and see whether... You might feel differently about that person now. People change over time, right?
Right.
So your brother, your sister, whoever it might be, you might be able to find some peace there. And I think anybody who says, you know what, I'm completely estranged from my family, but it's great for me, I rarely buy that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that any family is so toxic that they can't find a way to come together enough.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it just shows when you said you're carrying it around with you. You know, I started the beginning of this year saying I was going to be Miss Positivity.
I remember that.
And I've fallen off every once in a while. But I don't want to waste my energy worrying about someone else's success or failure, or so-and-so makes more money than I do, or someone has a better car. Because to me, that's wasting my energy.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to focus on achieving what I can achieve.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I totally get that. And I think that's great. And self-improvement is great. But I think,
I mean, carrying things around, you don't waste that negative energy worrying about other people. Worry about yourself.
Right. Because if you're carrying it around and you're worried about other people, you're still carrying it around, right? And you're not really taking very good care of yourself, right? So whatever you need to do to liberate yourself from some of that, that's a gift to yourself.
John, it's not fair to ask you this because we have 13 seconds left. But what do you think about this rule? Saying to the family at any gathering, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, we can talk about anything we want, but no religion talk and no politics talk. Can that happen or is that not fair?
I think on the whole, it's probably not fair.
Yeah.
And I know we don't have a lot of time, but sometimes when you get kids who are older, it might be interesting if you can remove your judgment from it to hear what they think about the world and about politics and about things that are going on. Sometimes that can foster really positive connection, not just strife. So my bias isn't always to extract that wholly because sometimes it's really interesting, especially with young people, to hear what they have to say.
I don't know if you guys saw SNL when they had a family gathering, and anytime something uncomfortable came up, they would pump up Adele singing.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed to calm everything. I have downloaded that on my phone. I used it for Thanksgiving. I'll be using
it
for Christmas.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
It's so great.
John, great to see you again. Have
great
a great holiday. I hope you patch things up with your family. I really do. I know it's been a rough going for you. The book is called The Available Parent, and he's got plenty of other books, all of them very helpful. His website, drjohnduffy.com. Thanks again.
Thank you,
appreciate
guys.
It. News
you.
Is next, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy. After that, it's WGN. Kim, thanks. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy may have just helped me with my ongoing problem, my irrational fear of needles. I explained to him, and you already know the story. I'll just tell you really
You're
quick.
You're a big baby.
I am a big baby. I'm a huge baby.
Wee,
always
wee.
Afraid of, deathly afraid of needles, incredibly afraid of needles. I needed a test. I needed to have an MRI done, a 3D imaging test a couple of weeks ago. And I was so nervous about getting the IV during that test that I went to see a psychologist that deals in irrational fears to try to give me something that would take my mind off the shot. He did
Not,
this thing.
You don't mean medication. You mean give you some ideas.
Yeah, I had heard from several different sources that there's doctors that specialize in this sort of thing and they can reprogram your mind. Because when I was a kid, I was afraid of needles and I always thought as I get older, it would go away. But instead of going away, it's actually intensified. It's gotten worse as I've gotten older. Steve Cochran's son, Ross, has the same thing I have. He faints when he sees needles. I get violent when I see needles. I threaten the person.
For some reason, Ross gets a little more... special treatment. You get angry. If someone faints, you know, the nursing staff feels bad.
They feel
like,
bad.
Poor thing.
Right.
You punch them.
I've never punched anybody, but I have threatened them. You know the story with the doctor where I said, if you give me a shot, only one of us is going to walk out of the room and it's not going to be you.
And my sister-in-law worked there and came out and said, Bill, the doctor said he would not like
He has suggested that you see another physician. Yeah. He's no longer your doctor. So I saw this psychologist who deals in irrational fears, and he gave me this thing where you hold a rubber ball in each of your hands, and he told me different scenarios, and then they give you electrical impulses left and right that keep alternating, and it's to kind of reprogram your mind. And it worked to the extent where when the session was over, I said to myself, I can do this. I'm actually looking forward to the day where they give me the shot just to prove that I can get through it. Flash forward 4 days ahead. As they came at me with the needle, I started sweating bullets, and then my teeth were chattering. I got really hot, then really cold, and they gave me the shot, but it did not go well. Well, John Duffy just told me about this thing that is now downloadable, where it's a meme, where it's a ball that keeps inflating and deflating.
I didn't hear the meme part. I've been searching for the last...
For a real ball? No, it's just like it's like an animated ball that keeps getting bigger and smaller. And if you have a fear like this, you're supposed to look at it on your phone and match your breathing process to that of the balls, and then they could give you a shot. And if everything goes right, you won't threaten the doctor's life.
All right. Well, we have to find that. Did you then ask him what a meme was?
No, I knew what that was.
Really?
You know, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got a computer at the house.
Wow.
Yep.
What is it?
Commodore 64.
What's a meme?
Oh, it's like that little little animated GIF figure, right? That keeps doing the same thing over and over and over.
Very good.
Isn't that what it is?
You can use my thinking putty.
And this is similar to it's.
This is
I call
ridiculous.
It silly putty, but you say it's not silly putty.
This is Crazy Aaron's putty.
Now the name
putty.
Crazy is on it. Does that deter you at all from its reliability?
No, you can go to puttyworld.com. I'm not getting paid for this endorsement. In fact, I spent probably $50 on various different types of thinking putty for my son Dylan, who loves playing with it.
Yeah,
and it's just Kevin liked it. I gave it to him. It's just a big. It's like silly putty,
but more glittery.
Well, you
right?
can get various colors. I got the glittery one because I'm kind of glittery.
Yes.
I'm a glittery girl.
Yes.
And they have
You
glow
stole
in
it from Mariah Carey, didn't you?
Yes.
Give it back to Mariah Carey.
Yes. They have one that's just like candy cane for Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's all white, like fresh fallen snow. And it comes with a little light so you can write little letters on it.
And the purpose of it is so that your mind focuses more, right? It's misdirection. It's so your mind focuses more on that object as opposed to whatever's bothering you, right? Isn't
or
that it?
Just I fiddle with things when I'm on the air all day.
Yeah.
HR talked to me about that, and then I started playing with a pen.
Yep.
And
you kept breaking the pen. I saw that.
And I still have to, even if I do, like I don't do a lot of voiceover stuff on the side, but when I do, I can't do it without a pen in my hand.
Why would that be, do you think?
Because I was a big fan of Bob Dole.
Oh, all right, now it all makes sense.
I just, I don't know. I have to have something. I fidget a lot.
Yeah.
So Dylan was into this thinking putty, and I said, oh, I'm going to get me some glittery silver stuff. And Kevin, I let you play with it for a while.
Changed Kevin's life.
No, but you didn't want to give it back.
It just feels nice.
It does. Steve Bertrand kind of liked playing with
it. Oh, yeah?
Oh, I don't want to. Okay, never mind. I'm done with it then.
You talked him out of it. Kevin's done with it.
His hands are clean. You know what? That just raises an interesting point. I am going to be very selective of who I'm going to let touch my thinking putty.
That's a good law. That's a very solid law.
Yeah, I didn't think, like, if somebody on the bus wants to use it.
I wouldn't do that.
I don't take the bus. When was the last time I've been on a bus?
Even if you did.
But I'll find you that meme. If not, Dr. Duffy will. But things like that just refocus your focus.
But for some reason, and I don't know what it is, like, as the doctor was explaining to me about these electrical charge rubber balls that were going through my hands and stuff. And even as John was explaining this to me, my brain is going, yeah, but I know that it's just misdirection. It won't work.
Well, you know what it is. You're fighting it. You fight everything.
Yeah, I am fighting this.
Yeah, but you have to say, you know what, I got to do some tests. I got to stop being a baby.
Right.
I'm going to get past this. But it's like you don't want to get past it.
Well, the weirdest part is, and I told you this already, I know the needle doesn't really hurt that bad. It hurts for a second, and I understand that. But that's not the problem. It's the anticipation of it coming at me.
I get that. Everybody gets that. And unfortunately, irrational fears are just that.
Yeah.
Very irrational.
Right.
There's
right.
no real reason for it.
Right.
Other than you've spent your whole life protecting yourself. You don't want someone coming at you with a sharp object.
I need a new irrational fear. I want to trade my irrational fear in for a new one. I've had the needle one for way too long. I need a new one. Why couldn't I be afraid of pirates or something? Just something that I know isn't going to get me anytime soon. You don't have to go in for a once a year pirate checkup, but I know I have to get a once a year shot or twice a year.
You got to preface things by saying, God forbid.
But God forbid.
God forbid. You got to say it like that, too.
Right.
Nothing serious health-wise has happened to you. So it's not like these poor kids that have cancer
that
are stuck with needles every minute of every day and adults with cancer. So why? How many times do you think you've been stuck with a needle your whole life thus far?
Maybe 50-something, maybe.
I don't even think that many.
You don't think so? No?
I think you got to just say, hey, it's part of the plan.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like being stuck in traffic, do you? I know that irritates you.
But I'm not afraid of that. Like, with needles, I'm flat out afraid. Like, I'm not even going to hide the language. I'm afraid of them. They scare the daylights out of me. It's ridiculous because as I'm getting the shot, I'm feeling it going, that's not even that bad. So why wouldn't my brain just go, well, then the next time, say to yourself, it's not that bad.
I don't know. Maybe it's me. But Kevin, wasn't he saying he wasn't afraid of needles before? So this is a big step that you've now admitted you're afraid of them.
Oh, no, I've always said
I thought you never said you were afraid.
No, I've always been afraid of them. I'm so afraid of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Just the
I thought you were making some improvements.
Oh, no. I'm going backwards. I'm worse than I used to be for some reason.
Can't you ask them to give you a baby needle? They do make those.
Baby needle? Yeah.
Yeah, they're really tiny for infants that... You know, when you're a bad mother and your kid is dehydrated and both your kids have to go to the hospital to get saline solution, they have baby IVs.
I'll ask for a baby needle.
Could you record yourself and do a meme of you doing that?
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to dress like a baby when I go in, and then they'll just go, we have to give him a baby needle. He's an infant.
And they'll say the fetish office is down
right,
that way.
Right. See room 618. All right. A break and then more show coming up. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, I have a couple of notes from the world of show business. Do you have some texts first, though, or should I give you the show business notes?
No, I'm still looking for the meme stress ball.
All right. This is a little segment we like to call Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. These are different little things from the world of show business that you should be aware of. The Wiz is going to be on television tomorrow night.
One of those live things again?
Yeah, they're going to do a three-hour live presentation of The Wiz.
Give me a good name that's in it.
David Alan Greer will be in it.
Seriously?
He will play the Cowardly Lion. Yeah. Mary J. Blige will be in it.
Okay, I'm in.
She will play the evil witch in it. Stephanie Mills, who I believe was Dorothy when they did it
on
Broadway.
Down the road, yes.
She is now, because Stephanie Mills has gotten older, how dare she, will be Auntie M in this production.
That's a better role.
But now here's the controversy. Uzu Aduba will be Glinda, by the way.
Ba-be-de-be-de.
Uzu Aduba.
Ba-be-de-be.
Uzu Aduba. She is, I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but she plays Crazy Eyes on Orange is the New Black. She's very talented. She's Glinda.
Is.
But here's the controversy. Are you ready? The Wiz this time around, the person playing The Wiz will be a woman. It'll be Queen Latifah. Who is not actually a queen. I did a genealogy report on her. She's not actually a queen.
You're wrecking my world.
I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings.
I think she's going to be great as the wizard.
I think she'd be pretty good as the wizard, but there's a lot of people upset saying that's one of those roles that you don't mess with. The Wiz is supposed to be a guy.
Oh, my God.
I have more important things to do, like be afraid of needles. I don't have time for a letter-writing campaign, but a lot of people say, I'm boycotting the Wiz, and Gary McCarthy has been fired over this. Superintendent Gary McCarthy has been fired because of this.
People are boycotting this.
People
Listen,
will not watch a female Wiz.
Peter Pan was played by Kathy Rigby.
Kathy Rigby and
Mary
Martin.
Wearing a maxi pad.
Right, yes. People don't realize that.
One last year it was Allison Williams.
That's right.
See?
On NBC.
And I watched a little of that. That was good. I refused to watch The Sound of Music because I've not seen it this long. Why should I do it now?
And I refused to watch The Wiz. Never been a fan.
You guys are not going to watch The Wiz?
I saw it at the Schubert Theater.
Did you?
And I want to say...
It's pretty good.
Diana Ross was in it when my mom took me and my sister took me to see it.
Really?
Yeah. It was awesome.
Impressive casting. You know who should have played The Wiz? Wiz Khalifa should have played The Wiz. Why didn't they get him?
He was taking a whiz. When the call came in.
I didn't realize that. All right, so if you're not going to play along with the boycott of The Wiz, watch it tomorrow night on NBC. It's going to be 3 hours long.
All right, but Kim, you're not boycotting it because The Wiz is a woman.
No, absolutely not.
You just don't
not.
Enjoy the work of The Wiz.
Right, just
come
not,
on in. He's on down the road.
We should do a WGN production of The Wiz. You could sing in that. They'd be
and
great in that.
Wasn't Michael Jackson. He was in
the
movie,
was in
right?
It.
Yeah, I just didn't like it.
And the great Nipsey Russell.
Absolutely,
great,
my friend.
Great Nipsey Russell was in The Wiz, too.
I want to say
he was on something other than Match Game.
Yes.
Bomp.
When this day started, Kim, I didn't think you would take a shot at Nipsey Russell. I was shocked by that moment right there.
Was Diana, it's been one of those days.
I want to know if Diana Ross and Michael Jackson were in The Wiz at the Schubert Theater together. Because
I don't
swear
think Michael Jackson was in the stage production. I think he was just in the movie.
Oh,
I
well,
think.
He looked a little like Diana Ross.
Wasn't Richard Pryor The Wiz in the movie? Wasn't he? I think he was.
I think he was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was.
Queen Latifah's going to do great.
She's talented. She's very talented. All right. So bust through the boycott and watch The Wiz if you're in the mood. Nipsey Russell's in it.
I wish. That is something. False advertising. People are going to tune in. Where's Nipsey Russell?
We came to see Nipsey Russell. Where's Nipsey Russell? And then one more quick note from showbiz. This is very upsetting. You know who Jonah Hill is, right?
Yes.
Jonah Hill, if you stop him and ask for his autograph, you're going to be in for some interesting times. It says here, the 21 Jump Street star has reportedly taken to refusing autographs on the street. If you see Jonah Hill on the street, don't even ask him for his autograph, because here's what he'll do. He will not sign anything for you. Instead, he will hand out a business card that says these words on it. I just met Jonah Hill, and it was a total letdown.
That's funny.
It is funny.
He should do that after he autographs
right,
something.
Right.
Because the fact that he's not autographing.
It's upsetting.
Yeah, I'd be like, I didn't really want it. You're famous. I thought I should ask for it.
I know.
The card's funny, though.
The card is very funny, but it is still, you're kind of getting what you want a little bit. You're getting a moment with Jonah Hill, but then in the end, you're just left with a card that says he wouldn't autograph anything. So I don't know if that's good or not. Nipsey Russell would have signed something for you. That guy, he'd go out of his way to help you out.
Nipsey Russell gave me an autograph once on my arm, and I got a tattoo of it.
Is that
of
right?
Of his autograph.
How about that?
I'll show you during the break.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then Steve Bertrand will tell us what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, I hate to start out the second half of our show on a sad note, but we almost lost Kevin, our producer, in a freak workplace accident. He almost died. Did you see any of that?
I saw the aftermath of it, where there was a dangling ornament.
There was a dangling ornament. Our studio is decorated beautifully, thanks to the good people at Tree Time. It's as Christmassy can be. It looks phenomenal. And Kevin was moving things around in the studio, getting the show ready, and he almost impaled himself. He almost stabbed himself in the head with an ornament. Came within an inch of his life of not having Kevin with us anymore.
You know, these ornaments are much like myself, beautiful but dangerous.
So true. That's very true.
I'll tell you, though, that's a good way to go.
To be impaled by an ornament?
I could think of a few better ways. That's not my first choice.
Do you remember who in TV history died on a Christmas tree? Somebody stabbed themselves with a Christmas tree and died. Do you remember who it was?
I don't know.
It's a show that I know you're a fan of. It was Garth Gimble, Martin Mull, on TV's Mary Hartman, got into a fight with his wife, and he got impaled on a Christmas tree, and he passed away.
I got to find that on YouTube and watch it just for the holidays.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, it's funny you bring up Tree Time. Why don't we give away a black and red artificial desktop holiday tree, courtesy of Tree Time. There are just beautiful little white mini lights all over it. You have to put them on yourself.
Right.
Tree Time, with over 200 beautiful, realistic artificial Christmas trees and thousands of unique ornaments and decorations. Visit Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington or treetime.com. And today is the 2nd of December.
It is.
Let's do caller 2.
Look at how easy you're making it on Kevin, who almost lost his life
because
of an ornament.
Well, that's why I'm doing it. 312-981-7200. Sorry, I just said 312. You won't get through if you just say 312.
No, you have to do the whole number. Right. Oh, we almost lost him. Are you aware of what's going on presently at Chicago's Roosevelt High School on the Northwest Side? Do you know what's going on there? The students have taken it upon themselves to boycott the school lunch program because they say, the kids there at Roosevelt High School claim, that the food there is worse than prison food. And so they're not going to eat it until they improve the food there.
Is it free?
I don't think it's free.
Then can't they make their own lunch?
Yeah, they could. Wow, did you solve that fast? You're the solver of all problems.
Hunger strikes, I don't get.
Because
I don't like being hangry.
No one wants to be hungry and angry at the same time. I think it's part of the school cafeteria's job to serve substandard food. I've never been in a school cafeteria that served good food. Have you?
Well, of course I'm going to say yes, because look where I eat.
You enjoy the cafeteria food here at the station, so yeah.
Can I tell you I should lay on the couch, because you just really solved this whole issue with me in the cafeteria here at the Trib Tower. I loved cafeteria school in junior high. It was, I guess, bad by most people's standards.
Yes.
When the pizza has orange cheese on it and ground beef, you think, you know what, that I could do better. Especially in Chicago.
Yes.
But I think I like going to that cafeteria because it makes me, I loved school.
It reminds you of school.
I loved it.
Yeah. I did too, but I would always bring my own lunch.
Yeah,
very
White Castle
rarely.
And make everyone salivate. You know,
a lot
when
of
you
times
get.
It was White Castle.
You just, and the teachers used to let you heat it up in the teacher's lounge microwave.
That's right. In grade school.
Who did your parents pay off?
I'm still to this day not sure exactly why I was allowed to do it, but I didn't subscribe to the school lunch program because they didn't have food that I liked. So my mom would get me, like, every couple of days we would go to White Castle and get a couple extra hamburgers.
Every few days you went?
No, realistically it was like once a week. But
like that much difference?
But the extra hamburgers would last me for 3 days, you know, and I would have two hamburgers for lunch.
I'm not saying you ate them all at once.
No, I couldn't eat them all
at once. But, I mean, to have them throughout the course of a week? And you're Mr. Health Food now?
I am now, but back then, they didn't have health in the 60s. Nobody was healthy in the 60s. Everybody was fat and happy.
No, they weren't, because they were taking amphetamines.
Oh, that's true.
Pills. Congratulations to who walked away with our tree time desktop artificial holiday tree that's black and red with white mini lights?
Lori in Huntley.
Congratulations. I wonder if she knows Orion.
It's possible. He hails from there. So I was allowed to go into the teacher's lounge and heat up my White Castles. And then sometimes other kids would ask if they could also go into the teacher's lounge and heat up the food.
They're Chef Boyardee in a thermos.
And the answer was always a stern no. And I don't get why I was allowed to, but for some reason I was allowed to.
Look at you.
It was a miracle.
It was a miracle. You went to a Catholic school.
But then all the other kids, you know, because there's always.
They hated you.
No, they didn't hate me. I'm America's favorite boy, Wendy. They would want to trade with me. They would offer me incredible deals.
Let's hear the incredible trade deal that's going to top a slider.
One time it was a ride on the skateboard. I could ride home on a skateboard. But I was too hungry to take that trade. But that was a normal thing in my school. Every kid is like, you get hot White Castles for lunch. Pick anything in my bag. What do you want? I'll trade you for the White Castle. I wouldn't do it. I'd have my agent, Steve Mandel, try to negotiate a deal with them, and it didn't work out that way.
You know, you like to be the envy of everyone. You still, to this day, like that.
It's fun to be the envy of people. All right,
puts a lot of pressure on
it
you.
It does put some pressure on you. Here is the story. This is from TakePart.com, Wendy. It says, culture and education editor Liz Dwyer has written about race, parenting, and social justice for several national publications. She was previously an education editor over at Good.com. So here's what she says. Rotten pears, burned pizza, and fat-filled chicken patties and awful-tasting hamburgers are just some of the unappetizing, often unhealthy lunch items being served to the teens at Roosevelt High School. Now, that list that I just read to you, you could find that at any high school anywhere on the planet. That's what they serve for lunch. Bad pears, burned pizza, fat-filled chicken, and awful-tasting hamburgers. That's what you get.
I went to RB High School, and we had a burger called the Bulldog Burger because that was our mascot. And it sucked. But you would make it good by putting ketchup, mustard, and the little squeezable paper cup of slaw that came with it. You'd put it on the burger. It was
good, really?
Well, it wasn't good, but given the options, their french fries were always good.
Yeah, you know, for some reason, even though the cafeteria food is normally bad, for some reason the french fries usually are the saving grace. I don't know why.
They never changed the oil. And it just got tastier and tastier.
Well, at our this is probably the way it is at every cafeteria. They would fry everything, and I mean everything, in that same vat of oil. So everything tasted the same no matter what you got. It tasted exactly the same.
I liked high school food, and junior high was really good. Oh my God. And then they'd have hamburger day, and then the next day they'd have spaghetti day, because whatever hamburgers were left over, they'd make spaghetti sauce. Who cares? You're a kid.
Now, our school, I don't know if I ever explained this to you, because this is a mystery to me to this day. I still don't understand this. we would alternate throughout the school year, one day a month, because we didn't have a cafeteria in our grade school. St. Damien did not have a cafeteria because St. Damien was the guy who cured leprosy or found leprosy or discovered leprosy. I don't know. And they were afraid that they would be forced because of the name to have lepers prepare our food. And the kids didn't want that.
Is this a finger in my spaghetti? Right.
This tastes odd. So we would alternate one day a month. It would be either hamburger day or hot dog day. And on the hot dog day, it was Dave Berg hot dogs. It said it right on the hot dogs. Those are pretty good hot dogs.
You got those at your school?
Yeah, what? Just one day a month.
This is elementary, like up to eighth grade?
Yeah, first through eighth grade. But then when it was hamburger day, we got McDonald's, but they would take the McDonald's wrappers off of them in a room. There was a room where they would deliver all the McDonald's hamburgers, and it was somebody's job to take the McDonald's wrappers off and put them in silver tinfoil. But we all knew they were McDonald's because we'd see the McDonald's truck in front. And we all knew what McDonald's hamburgers taste like. So who were they trying to fool? Why would they put them in metallic wrapping? Why not give us the McDonald's? We knew it was McDonald's.
Evidently, the Catholic Church did not agree with what McDonald's was doing at that point.
Could that be it?
I don't know.
Is that what it was?
I think somebody just unwrapped them so they could lick the top bun. Because I have a,
that
you know.
That never happened ever in history once.
People lick the end of the bread, the loaf that's sticking out of the paper. Just make the paper longer.
This has been your fear since you were a kid, and yep. You still to this day believe that people are licking the tops of buns.
Well, I think that actually
what
not
did they
that.
Get out of that? Why would they do that?
Because when you get a loaf of French bread and that exposed end is out,
yeah,
it's tempting.
No, it's not tempting. I've seen that 1,000 times in my life. I've never had the thought of, I should lick that bun on the baguette.
You do now?
I should not.
You think
no,
about it now?
You've told me about it before, and I've seen it,
yeah,
and this is what I think about now when I see it. I go, what does Wendy see in the top of the bun that would make her want to lick the top of a bun? But you have no evidence that anyone's ever done this,
right? It shouldn't be exposed. Just make the paper longer or the bread shorter. Seriously. Don't get me started. I'll go home. This and the dime situation
right, no,
when you're given change.
And Caillou. So if you were ever to buy a French sandwich from Caillou with an exposed bun, that way you would explode.
Yeah.
You'd be like a scanner.
That'd be
just
it.
Just explode.
I don't know why. You got lucky having burgers. Did you
one
have to
day
pay
a month.
For them?
Yeah, they were 65 cents. It's not bad.
Over 1 billion Christians served.
I bet that's why, because McDonald's hamburgers at the time were like 35 cents, so the school was charging 65 cents. They were making a profit. I bet that's what it was.
That's what Catholic schools do.
That's got to be it, right? Because they'd go, uh-oh, they'll figure us out if we're giving them hamburgers they can get down the street for 30 cents less. That's what it is,
genius.
I bet. It is genius.
Who's the patron saint of...
of thriftiness?
Yes. hi, Dave. How are you? You had burgers at your school?
Yeah, we, Walter Lutheran in the 70s in Melrose Park, it was a Cock Robin a block away. We used to break banks at lunch, and the seniors would all go down there and get hamburgers and buy about 100 of them and come back and sell them in the lunchroom.
Wow.
I miss Cock Robin hamburgers. They had the best.
And then, there was a Jack in the Box like two blocks past that. So, yeah, we pretty much all gained weight in high school.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Wow, you had a good. I should have gone to a Catholic school. I would have eaten better.
Yep.
You would've. One day a month.
No, that was a Lutheran high school. We ate just as well.
That's right. Walter Lutheran, you said that. All right. Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for caring.
You went to RB. They should have had Arby's.
Oh,
why didn't they have
horsey
those?
Sauce?
Yep.
Nancy knows why they did the foil.
Why, Nancy?
I believe they put them in foil so they could keep them warm and throw them like into an oven while they were waiting.
Oh, that might make sense, I guess.
That's what I think. And Wendy, I just stopped at the Mariani's in LaGrange and licked all the bread for you.
Oh my God, that's the one I go to, Nancy. I am not going there now today. Have a good one.
Have you ever asked, have you been in a restaurant and said, has anyone licked the spread?
It's not the restaurant.
It's
in
store.
The sleeve, the bread sleeve should be longer.
I guess, but they're not doing it to mess with you.
Wait, I always thought that was just the licking end.
No, it's not the licking end. Kevin, don't make Wendy even more crazy.
I give it to the dog. Tiki gets I rip the heel off, as my grandma called it.
That's right.
And I give it to Tiki every day.
And then Tiki goes, I'm not eating this.
No, he's fine.
The dog probably licked it.
The dog licked it after they licked themselves.
Right.
All right, we have an anonymous caller, and this gets me very excited when we do anonymous
callers.
They're
the best callers, the anonymous callers.
Hi, Anon.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I just heard your conversation about school food, and I wanted to talk because my mom has been a food service manager for 20-something years
really?
At middle school. Yeah.
And
it's been a trip. I remember growing up, She would bring home leftovers that we'd be so excited for. Sorry, excuse me.
You're getting all choked up thinking about it, aren't you?
Yeah, I miss it. No, they used to have real turkey and all this wonderful food, and I used to visit her, and she'd have a full-time baker, sandwich maker.
And a candlestick maker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes. In good times, they would do that.
They used to make such good food. And
at a school cafeteria, they had good food,
they
really?
They put love into it. They're feeding children.
I can't believe it. Children are our future. I guess.
The teachers used to line up first. You'd have 15 or 20 teachers before the kids would eat. And now I go there, and I see the food, and there's corn that has husk bits in it. Everything comes in bags. She's gone from a job where she used to actually cook to now it's just
reheating food.
And reheating. Recently, the school had a nice Thanksgiving dinner for the kids, and she smuggled in sugar for the desserts so they would actually taste good.
Just sugar? Who wants some sugar?
Apples. Otherwise, the apples just tasted.
Oh, they would just spray it on the other food. Okay. That makes more sense, I guess. just lining up for sugar. Mm.
But no, people used to ask for recipes, cookie recipes.
Really?
Yes.
Are you shocked by that, Wendy? I'm surprised by that.
You go to the school page and it's like schedules, online grades, and cafeteria recipes.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it, Anonymous.
Yeah.
Take care.
Well, yeah. You too.
Have a good holiday.
Happy eating.
Why was he afraid to give his name? He could have given his name.
I don't know. I thought he was going to break bad. That's why I thought he gave an anonymous name.
No, fine. All right, we'll do a quick break, and then a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
What instrument is that?
Baby wah pedal. This, of course, is the band Bread. And much like your fear of not eating bread because you think somebody has licked it, you would not go see the band Bread in concert because you thought that somebody had licked them.
You're stepping on David Gates.
Sorry, David Gates.
This was when times were simpler and more lovely.
Yeah, you don't want to upset David Gates. He sounds tough.
Right. This makes me...
I'd like him to come in here and just punch you as hard as he could.
He couldn't because I'd run.
This song makes me believe that I am in an elevator.
No, because there's vocals.
Oh, I guess. But you know that somebody muzaked that song at some point, right?
It was already muzaked with vocals.
Right, it came pre-muzaked, didn't it?
Baby, I'm a want you. Remember that song?
Yep.
Baby, I'm a need you.
Yep.
I loved Bread.
Yes.
Just don't lick my bread.
Right, that's your rule.
Someone has scared me. I have a fear of the exposed end of a loaf of bread that's at your Mariano's or your Jewel.
Any store in the world that has bread, you think somebody has licked it.
Canela, any of these breads, Toronto, you make the bread sleeve longer to fit the bread or make the bread smaller. Then there are no exposed ends.
I think for some reason it looks more European the way that it is. I enjoy it the way that it is. And I've never once had the fear that somebody has pre-licked the bread. I can't believe this even comes to you.
Well, someone has made my fear worse.
Why?
You know how you have an irrational fear of needles?
Right.
I have an irrational fear that someone has licked the end of my bread.
Right, sure.
Somebody, 513, says, what about the restaurants who have bread delivered in the morning before they're open and the exposed bread is just left at the restaurant door?
Yeah. So rats could lick it? Is that what they're getting at?
Anyone. We have a special report that we have.
I'm sorry to interrupt you guys,
but
we're getting information about some sort of shooting, a mass shooting. It's not clear just yet. It's happening in California, in the San Bernardino, California area, where there have been reports of as many as 20 people injured. Now, again, we don't know too much about that just yet, but we hope to learn more in this special report from ABC.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Mark Remillard. Police and authorities in Southern California right now working an active shooter situation. This active incident is occurring right now in San Bernardino. City fire departments there reporting that they may have as many as 20 victims. SWAT teams are en route, again, stationed. Police and authorities in Southern California working an active shooter situation at this time. This has been a special report from ABC News.
So, again, sadly, we don't have too much more information to add to that other than that this clearly is a situation that is unfolding now. The police and fire are there or are on their way there. but a report of a mass shooting in San Bernardino, California. Now, one thing I will say, Bill and Wendy, is that clearly from the information we got from ABC, it wasn't much, which means that...
It's happening now.
Well, not just that, but a lot of times when you get information very quickly, it doesn't always turn out to be the actual case. So we do know there's something happening there, and certainly we will have more coming up as soon as we do know more.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get right to news. But I'm hoping that 2016 brings us the lack of term active shooter, because it's just getting
way too often all of a
there
sudden.
There was a statistic this week. There's been more than one mass shooting a day in this country this year.
That's awful. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news. We'll find out everything we can about the situation in California. Stick around. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, Bill and Wendy, we're going to break away there a little bit and continue to monitor in the newsroom. You've been listening to KABC-TV, and this is about a shooting situation, perhaps still an active shooting situation, in San Bernardino, California. There were reports before we went to KABC of perhaps 20 to 30 people being held hostage for a time. It is not clear yet whether that is confirmed or was just some early speculation or reporting, but they are saying the shooting happened at a center that provided sex education to mentally disabled people in California. And as you heard there, a KABC reporter earlier reporting, not confirmed by authorities, but by his sources, that there are indeed several fatalities. He used the number 12. We have heard that there were 20 people, perhaps a few more than that, shot in this shooting situation. Again, the calls of it all, the first that authorities heard from it about 23 minutes ago, so not too long. Again, this still very much an active situation in San Bernardino, California.
This is, thank you, by the way,
thanks, Steve.
This is where Twitter really comes in handy.
Because it's so instantaneous, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston Globe, everybody's jumping in on this. So to get breaking news, you don't need to turn anywhere else on the radio dial, because we will set you up once that information becomes available.
Can I ask the most basic question? And I wonder this every time a story like this happens, which is now so frequently, and the question is a very simple one. Why is this happening with the frequency that it's happening? What could possibly be making this happen on an almost daily basis? Does it make any sense that almost every day now we're hearing reports of a story similar to this?
Sometimes I feel, you know, first of all, someone is not in their right mind to do this in the first place.
But that's always been the case, right?
Right,
we've always had that as a factor.
If you're thinking about doing it and, you know, you probably hopefully try to bury those thoughts, but then if you hear it talked about, I don't know, does that push you to the next level if you're unstable to begin with?
I don't know. You hear the blame on everything from violence in movies and television shows to the proliferation of video games to, as you just said, the over-reporting of it. But how do you over-report it if it's such a major news story? You can't just not talk about
it. Well, no, you have to talk about it.
But does that trigger, does somebody who's on the edge and hearing it more and more often say, I guess that's the thing you do when life isn't going your way, is you just take a gun out and start shooting at people at random? I don't understand the correlation.
I don't really either, and that's because we're in our right mind. Obviously, these are troubled individuals, which my question is, doesn't somebody, either friend or family, notice that this person is in a troubled state of mind? And before this happens, it's not like all of a sudden, you know, you're feeling mentally unstable and just decide to do this. This
right.
is kind of like something that's building and growing out of control, don't you think?
Don't you think
there's a family or friend, that a family member or friend who says, yeah, something's not quite right with Jim over here?
But when you look at the people who have done this in the past, and they interview all the people that they went to school with and their next door neighbor and their people, you get the sense of, we knew that things weren't going well for him. Every once in a while you hear a story like, oh, that was the last guy in the world I expect to do something like this. But what normally happens is somebody that they know say, yeah, you could kind of tell by their behavior. I hate to say this, but the guy who shot up the Planned Parenthood thing the other day, when you looked at that guy,
oh my God.
You said to yourself, I know you can't judge a book by its cover.
Oh, yes,
but when you
can.
Look at that guy, you go, that guy's not right. Look at
He's
that guy.
He's going to do something terrible. That's what I said. You know, if looking at his picture, that's what I would think.
And I know that's terrible because
it is.
Every day you see people on the street and you wonder, what's the backstory on that guy? Is everything going okay for that guy? But when you saw that guy the other day from that shoot, you say to yourself, how could somebody who was around him not know just by the look of that guy?
Well, that was a mugshot. I don't think he walked around with that look all the time, I hope.
I hope not.
Active shooter situation being reported in California, as many as 20 shot. We will keep you posted on everything that comes over. Steve Bertrand and everyone in our newsroom, Kim Gordon, Judy Pilek, doing a wonderful job. So don't touch that dial. And call this number if you'd like to talk about it, because Bill and I don't understand it. Who does? 312-981-7200. Patty, what do you think?
My thing is, if all media would agree not to release the shooter's name, maybe we wouldn't give them their 10 or 15 minutes of fame.
I don't know, Patty. I get the idea, but I don't think it's just having their name out there. I have a feeling that above and beyond the name, it's I'm going to do something where the world will know that I exist. Even if it's not the name, it's like I'm going to get the attention of the world.
Like, look at hackers. You never know hackers' names. They just want to sit back with their buddies eating their Doritos going, look what I did. Yeah. I took down, you know.
But with hackers, unless the major virus that goes on, you don't hear about a lot of it. At least I don't, and I think I'm fairly news-savvy, so maybe I just feel that not releasing the shooter's name
could prevent it a little bit.
At least one step.
Yeah, maybe. You know? All right.
Although,
thank you for letting me express my opinion.
Sure,
absolutely, Patty. Thank you so much. But here's my thing, and I know Steve would agree with me here, and you probably would too. Even though we're on the radio, and I feel it's our job to give the details as they become available.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a news junkie, so if I wasn't at work, I would be Googling and searching and Twittering to find out, because I want to know who it is. I want to know what made them tick and what made them explode.
Absolutely, but here's what happens, and it happens over and over and over, is in the days that follow an event like what's going on right now and what happened with Planned Parenthood and go down the line, as everybody tries to put the pieces together of why that happened, we don't really know what to do with that information once we have it. We understand a lot of times it's a loner, and there's certain categories that they fit. It's usually a white guy, and on and on and on and on and on. But then when it's done with that, it doesn't make anything any easier or harder. We still don't understand how to stop it. We're right back where we were at square one, even after we've spent days trying to figure out, why did this guy snap? What happened? Do we know anything more after that? I don't know what we're getting.
You're making a very good point there, because we do get all the deets, and then
if I can sum up just what is going on right now, we have an active shooting situation in San Bernardino, California. KABC is reporting that there are 12 people who have been killed today. Earlier, fire department reports described it as a 20-injury situation. This shooting apparently at a facility that provides sex education to people with mental disabilities. One witness said that she walked out and had to walk past bodies to get to safety.
Oh, my God.
Let's go live now to California, where a witness is being interviewed by KABC.
Hiding as we speak. That's all I know.
Is she still hearing gunshots?
She didn't say anything about gunshots, but someone, I think, must have told her, because she never said she heard gunshots, but somehow she knew that, she said 10 to 20 people were shot.
And where does she work?
I don't know the name of the place, but it's a government agency that, you know, helps people deal with the healthcare stuff.
Has she seen any victims down?
No, she hasn't said anything about that. She's been hiding.
I imagine you must be really concerned right now.
It's your daughter?
Sorry.
Yeah.
She's hiding in there?
Yeah.
What'd she say to you? She sent you some texts?
She did.
What did she say?
She said, shooting at my work, people shot, in the office waiting for cops.
But she's okay.
Pray for us. I am locked. I am locked in an office. That's it.
What is your name?
Terry Pettit.
T-E-R-R-Y.
Again, Terry Pettit there, who's been talking to KABC and others about hearing from his daughter, who's working inside this facility, which is on Waterman, I believe in the 1300 block of Waterman in San Bernardino, California. Now, we've been told that at this facility they provide sex education to people with mental disabilities. And again, earlier, ABC in California saying that 12 people have been killed here, and perhaps as many more have been injured. Bill and Wendy, we're continuing to monitor it, and we'll let you know more as soon as we have more information.
Thanks, Steve.
That is heartbreaking audio. Is it
not? Impossible. All right. A lot of people on the line who want to talk. We've asked you some questions. What's going on in the world right now where this just seems to be a daily occurrence? 312-981-7200. We'll get to your calls and texts in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, and we are covering some breaking news. Active shooter reported in San Bernardino, California. Steve Bertrand is going to give us a brief update. We'll take a break, and we want to make sure we hit the news on time. Some terrible audio and
awful.
Just
and
things going out.
I want to reiterate, we will get to your calls. I know there's people who have been on the line. We're trying to figure out what the motivation is here. 312-981-7200. We'll get to those calls right after the news, I promise, Steve.
But it looks as if this shooting has happened at a building, a facility called the Inland Regional Center, which people there in San Bernardino says provides sex education to people with mental disabilities. Now, it seems to be a building of quite some size. They said there could be a couple of hundred people in there at any time, which makes it seem unlikely that it would provide just that service, but it's not clear. That certainly is done there. We're being told by KABC in LA that 12 people are dead, perhaps as many or more have been injured in this shooting. It is not clear yet whether it is still an active shooting situation, whether the shooters are still in the building. The police are trying to determine that. There are reports, and again, these often vary at this stage, but of anywhere from one to three gunmen. Many times, Bill and Wendy, we hear about multiple gunmen, and it turns out, you know, not to be the case. It turns out to be one. But
right.
That's just one of the things they're sorting out. We'll have much more coming up in the news at 2 o'clock.
And after the news at 2 o'clock, you can hang on or you can call us back, 312-981-7200. Someone's summing it up in a text from 847 pretty well. I don't know what's going on in this world with these active shooter situations. What I do know is that every time I get the chance, I make sure everyone I care about hears that I love them. And it's getting to that point.
Yeah.
You know, don't leave the house mad in the morning. Tell the people you care about that you care about them.
Yeah.
Don't leave anything unsaid because you never know what's going to happen.
Yep. That's so true. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get to the news, and then we will certainly take your phone calls as we try to make sense of the situation, the horrible situation in California going on right now. We're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And right, you are on WGN. You don't have to go anywhere else. We will keep you covered as all this develops. Some interesting texts that have come over and some calls that we'd like to take, 312-981-7200. Bill, this was fascinating to me. 219, about the shooting. We have a nephew who has some mental issues. While my nephew is very passive, I have seen him lose his temper once. 6'4", 30-year-old strong man off his meds can make everyone afraid. And after the person reaches majority, the parents lose control over the medication and HIPAA laws apply. What I'm saying is there could be family involved, but practically speaking, these individuals are not caged, and typically they don't like taking their meds either. You're both empathetic, and we're just trying to figure out what's going on and to try and see every angle of this.
One of the problems is everybody knows a handful of people that are borderline that you think to yourself, that guy or that girl has the ability to snap. I hope it doesn't happen. But we all know somebody in a family, you know, a neighbor, somebody you might work with who you think to yourself, something's not right with that guy. And I wouldn't be shocked. It would be the worst thing in the world if they snapped. But the thing is, if you're to call the authorities and tell them that, they would say, what do you want us to do about it? Have they done anything?
Well, that's just it.
Yeah.
They can't be arrested for being different.
No. So all this happens so randomly, and everybody always comes up with the same formula. It's the availability of guns, and I can't even start to get into that. But everybody says the bad guys can get guns. If you wanted a gun, you could get a gun anytime you want to. Plus the combination of mental illness. But the bottom line is the other factor in this is the randomness of it all. There's no way to stop it because it could happen anywhere at any time. There's no possible way to stop something like that when it's just that random.
And I hate to be a big baby, but sometimes I am. When 9/11 happened, yeah, I was kind of scared to come downtown for a while. I was scared about things. And then eventually when nothing else happens, you go about your business. I wasn't scared enough to stay in the house. But I'll tell you, after hearing these things and the words active shooters coming up frequently, I worry about my kids at school. When have you ever worried about your kids at school or your kids out at the mall? Or your wife who is at a movie today? Seriously.
Well, the when it hit me, and I've told you this before, is on a visit to my daughter's high school between their eighth grade year and their freshman year in high school, when I saw that you had to go through metal detectors, because that never would have happened in our schools to go through a metal detector. But I thought to myself, if
I'm
it
okay
makes
with
it safer, have metal detectors, please. Yeah.
Dave has called us, and Dave, there seems to be no logical explanation about all this, does there?
Well, hi, Bill and Wendy, and that's really some compelling audio from California. I just retired as sheriff here in Porter County last year, and ironically, I was in the process of sending emails. You know, you're talking about looking for a logical answer to an illogical act, and with risk management, you can't bring the risk down to zero. And I'm actually working now with some companies that have developed not solutions, not total solutions, but to mitigate the carnage. And I'm really heartened by what can be done by some alerting from social media sites. And the key is trying to get ahead of the act of when somebody finally does snap. And in so many instances, especially in school shootings, and we don't know what we're dealing with here, but in so many instances, for example, we learn after the fact that there were clues that were out there beforehand, many times on social media. And,
Steve, did you have some more information?
Wait, Dave, hold on one second.
You know, I'm sorry. I have a question for Sheriff Dave, actually. So, you know, Sheriff Bill brought up a great point, though. You know, someone calls your office and says, I'm worried about this guy. He hasn't done anything. He just seems a little hinky. I mean, what can you do with that?
That's a great question. It's a good point. I mean, you know, Sheriff Dart and I, we've spoken before about how jails have become the mental health facilities around the country. And, you know, we face the same thing, any jail you want to name. And you can't necessarily take overt action, but you do what you can to get the person into, you know, past a crisis point, whether there is something that when that contact is made, then you can perhaps get an emergency commitment. Police officers here in Indiana, I'm not sure about Illinois, but if someone expresses an obvious threat to themselves or others, either by word or action, police officers can institute and take into custody or commit someone for 24-hour observation, and at least starts the process.
Yeah, but that could also, once they get through the process, escalate them to the next level as well. Dave, we appreciate your information. Thanks for your service. I want to point out something that someone has texted from 847. It's so very difficult to treat mental illness in this society. People say, where are the families? I did find myself saying, you know, aren't there some friends and families
Sure.
that notice something? And I think this needs to be discussed. Families get worn down and they run out of options. Some of them don't have insurance. Some of them can't get help for their family member or friend. And I'm betting most of these families of the shooters must be completely devastated and guilt-ridden, so we don't need to pile on. That's an interesting point.
You've brought that up several times, how you feel a sympathy almost for the families when somebody goes off like this and starts shooting. You feel bad for their immediate families because they
didn't expect for this to happen.
Of course not.
Right. And then someone else will be a little more responsible and quit fear-mongering. I am not fear-mongering. I am just talking about my feelings. I'm not going to stay in my house. But we really do have to think about what might happen where, you know? Be prepared, I guess.
We are getting a little more concrete information, and again, short of absolute confirmation, but the Board of Regents at the Inland Regional Center is now saying that they have heard of 12 fatalities in this, and this is where the shooting is. So they would be in a situation of some authority. Also, the sheriff is saying that they are looking for anywhere from 1 to 3 people in connection with the shooting. But again, you know, there just have been so many times, Bill and Wendy, where there have been initial reports of multiple shooters or attackers.
Right.
And, you know, it's a very confusing, hectic situation when people are watching and listening to gunfire and echo of gunfire. So it's not always clear that there will be 3 people or 2 people, but the sheriff says they're looking for anywhere from 1 to 3 people now in San Bernardino, California.
And it goes back to like the old police scanners and stuff. You know, when you're checking out a situation, you don't know all the details.
Yeah.
But I like hearing them, and I like to hear what's happening at this moment. So, Steve, you're doing a great job, and obviously we won't know until more information is available.
Right.
How about we take a quick break and continue your calls, 312-981-7200. That's the text line, the phone line. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN.
A lot of phone calls and a lot of texts, 312-981-7200, as we try to make sense of a situation that you really can't make sense of. It's going on right now in San Bernardino, where an active shooter has, we believe, taken down as many as a dozen people. They're saying reports of 20 or so injured as well. But again, those details are just now being made more clear, so we will keep you posted. You want to go to the phones, Wendy?
Can we drop in again on
yes.
KABC? They're talking to a witness, someone who's been in contact with someone inside this center.
Possibly angry employees, anything like that?
No. No, he hasn't heard anything like that.
Did he describe whether he heard any shots or whether he saw any of the suspects?
No, he did not see anything in that.
What was the text message you received?
That the alarms had gone off and that they had received word that there was active shooters on site and that the police were there and they were trying to get a handle on it.
Yeah. And what did you do right away?
I just happened to be over in the area, so I just kind of swung by to, so in case he needed a lift or something, or, you know, if I needed to go to a hospital.
Do you know how many people might he be with right now?
He said there was a large group. The group he works with, there's only 3, but he said there was somewhere around 20 or so that he's been corralled up with right now.
So. As a father, what's going through your mind right now?
Now I'm at ease. You know, I know he's safe. He's outside and with the police. Police have got him under control. So, you know, I'm relieved at that point right now.
What do you make of this whole scene?
You know, they've got a good handle on it. I mean, it's not good seeing all the ambulances coming in and going out. You know, you see a bunch of them leave, and then, you know, right now here's 2 more pulling back up to come back in. So, not a good situation.
What was your name again?
You're listening live to an interview there with the man whose son was inside this facility, the Inland Regional Center. And just before we joined at Bill and Wendy, he said that he had been extricated, so he was out. So that's why he spoke of his relief. He was with several people who have been taken from the building. Again, this is in San Bernardino, about 60 miles east of Los Angeles, where now the search for the shooter or shooters continues, as does a triage operation. Several gurneys and stretchers outside of this facility in a safer area as they continue to deal with the wounded. The Board of Regents for the Inland Regional Center, which provides social services for the mentally ill, says that it has heard of 12 fatalities so far today.
And Steve, we go live to ABC News correspondent Kenneth Moten right now. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi.
What more information can you give us at this point?
Well, you know, even though this is happening across the country, when these types of things happen, you know, Washington is on alert. And from Capitol Hill to the White House, we're monitoring to find out exactly what type of response is coming from President Obama and from Capitol Hill. We know lawmakers on Capitol Hill are monitoring this situation, trying to find out more, especially those from obviously from California, trying to find out more about this ongoing situation. Counterterrorism officials also at this point are involved, along with the other federal officials from ATF, the FBI. They're all on the ground there in San Bernardino, trying to find out exactly what ties this has to possible terrorism. Does this have a flavor of Paris after the Paris terrorist attacks, what, nearly, what, 2-3 weeks ago. And so at this point, we just know that the suspects, we're waiting to get descriptions on them. We know that when it comes to these type of mass shootings, these soft targets are ideal. And so there's been a lot of attention, obviously, since the Paris terrorist attacks about these types of situations and coordinated attacks. And so at this point, we're waiting to learn more just about, at this point, you can definitely call it domestic terrorism, but we're trying to find out more about the extent of it.
I just asked Bill that off the air. If you've, you know, we obviously are all talking about this right now, and it doesn't look like your typical, you know, terrorist attack, but domestic terrorism certainly.
It definitely does. I mean, the reports we've been able to get from sources is that three gunmen walked into that facility and opened fire. And then after they opened fire and killed at least 12 people, that we're getting that number so far. That's the consistent number we're getting. We understand that they jumped back into a black SUV, and that's why we're seeing the large police presence we're seeing around that area right now as they try to, from everything from roadblocks to trying to get to the victims, trying to get people and out of those buildings. Which, you know, we've been seeing people walking out with their hands up. They really got that area on lockdown as they try to find these shooters. We understand police were on that scene very quickly. We know that when it comes to these to active shooter drills, you know, that's the world we live in these days. We know that police officers and SWAT teams have been told and trained to now move toward the threat. But we understand that even though this is still being called an active shooter situation, it appears that there's no more shooting happening at the facility and that those gunmen actually left. But now there's a lot of resources on the ground just trying to really lock that city down to find these men.
Kenneth, had we not had the incidents in France a couple of weeks ago, would there still be the same knee-jerk reaction, the possibility that this could be some sort of international terrorism? Is that now a standard thing, or is it because of the proximity to what happened in France?
It's definitely because of the proximity of what has happened in France. I mean, here in Washington, we have seen a number of things happen that have been a reaction to the ISIS terrorist attacks in Paris, right down to the troops on the ground, which was just announced yesterday, the special ops forces that are going to be on the ground soon in Iraq and in Syria. In the fight against ISIS, there have definitely been a number of those knee-jerk reactions, and I think we're seeing that again today. But I will say, being here in Washington just a few months ago, you know, remember a couple of years ago, we had that deadly Navy Yard shooting.
Yeah.
Well, then there was a scare a few months ago, and there were more resources since D.C. has the most law enforcement in the country. There were more resources there than any other time for any other event in recent memory. And so that's the times we live in when it comes to, as soon as there's a reporter, even an active shooter, we see all those resources head that way. But as far as the reaction to, you know, us thinking possible terrorism, I can't say that before Paris, that we would have thought immediately lone wolf attack. You know,
right.
We would have just thought, you know, another crazy person with a gun who's shooting up a facility like Sandy Hook or Virginia Tech, or Charleston. I mean,
right.
Unfortunately, I can name several off the top of my head.
I know.
And
yeah.
So, and that, like I said, and I it bears repeating, that's just the time we live in.
ABC News correspondent Kenneth Moten. Kenneth, this is the first we had heard of the black vehicles, which seems to be in question as well.
Right. There, you know, and that's the thing is, because we are so used to, and I really hate, guys, you have no clue how much I hate saying how we're used to covering something like this.
Yeah.
But that's the God honest truth, is that, you know, we're used to covering these things. And we always see just this rash of just unconfirmed reports. And we really want to make sure we don't speculate. We want to make sure we get out the right information. And the reason that I'm even reporting the 12 dead is because we have it from a number of independent sources to ABC News who have said the 12. But at this point, everything is just so preliminary. And so that was the report that came out about the black SUV and that there were three gunmen. The three gunmen has been pretty consistent. But at this point, we're waiting for San Bernardino to release more information. They are pushing out information on their Twitter feed. And we're also hearing from those people, just like we just heard from that gentleman on your air who was able to get out of the building. We're hearing from people who have family members in the building that were getting text and phone calls. And so at this point, there is a lot of preliminary information, and it also seems like that facility was so large there is an opportunity for rumors to run rampant right now.
Well, we appreciate you giving us this information, and I'm sure more will develop and we'll find out more. We appreciate it. Kenneth Moten, ABC News correspondent. Thank you so
much. Thanks, Kenneth.
Thanks, Bill and Wendy.
Appreciate it. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. There's been people who have been on hold for a very long time, and we apologize. There's so many new facts that just keep coming available as the show goes on. Steve's going to give you the news, and then I promise you we will get to those calls. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We've got your breaking news on 720 WGN, and Steve Bertrand doing a great job following the active shooter situation in San Bernardino, California. It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we have promised to get the listeners in on this, so shall we talk to
Tim? Absolutely, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill. This is Tim DeLong down in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hi,
Tim. Been a longtime listener of WGN, and just recently became a brand new listener to your show.
Thank you.
We don't have a show like that in Indianapolis, Indiana, so I listen to you guys when I'm waiting for my son to come out of Indianapolis school and get very educated.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you doing that, Tim. Thanks.
I'll let you guys know that, number one, I am a freelance news media stringer in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to you guys when you broke into ABC programming for the announcement of the shooting in San Bernardino. I've got you guys up on audio on the computer. I've had you guys up on the car radio since I came home. I've got two or three different sources going, and Wendy, there's a scanner fee that's available. If you would like to take me off the air for I can give you my name and phone number, you guys in the newsroom are welcome to call me. I'm covering this situation from like three or four different angles.
All right. Well, we will get your information. You can give it to Kevin. We'll put you on hold when we're finished talking to you.
Is basically the information. The reason why I'm calling is because the information that I've got, and this is all unconfirmed, is that I understand there's three white males that were dressed in fatigues that they're looking for that were holding long guns is who they're looking for. The suspects are still on the loose. Also, I'm getting unconfirmed information. The bomb squad is on the scene inspecting an unknown device at the location. This is all, again, all unconfirmed. I'm monitoring the situation. And also, the reason why I called you guys is because of the disabled people. My son has autism here in the Indianapolis area in Marion County, Indiana, and attends a high school that I formerly attended, and I graduated. Now he's the third generation of my family going through the school. He's highly functional. I'm concerned about something like this happening in the Indianapolis area. We hear this not only in the media, but also all across the country, and not only outside, you know, inside the United States, but also outside the United States with the current state of conflict going on. I'm hoping that all schools across the United States will beef up their security to make sure that not only the students like my son, but also the other students inside the schools will be protected with school resource officers and make sure the training is available from the federal, state, and local levels to prevent this from happening. And we've seen this happen in Colorado. We've seen this happen today in San Bernardino. Where might this happen next across the country? Let's hope this never happens again.
Tim, can I ask you a really quick question, because you're close to the situation? Your son attends a school very similar to the one in San Bernardino. What could a gunman or gunmen possibly gain out of an act like this? What are they getting out of this to come into a school where disturbed people are learning? What do they have to gain in shooting up a school like that?
I see no value in this whatsoever, taking needless lives. As a former police officer myself, being involved in first responding along with being involved in search and rescue and doing a lot of things. You know, I'm 51 years old, and I was a police officer here in Indianapolis for 3 years with the state of Indiana. Basically, I see no value in this. I mean, they're taking needless lives. You know, why are these people doing this? Because we hear this in everyday stories across the country on an everyday level. When is Congress, or when is the president, or when is someone in government going to speak out and clamp down on these people? And if they do have a mental illness, then why are these people not being recognized? I mean, it's like, if you see something, hear something, tell somebody. If you have a family member that you think that is showing the signs, talk to that individual, get them some professional help. I don't see, you know, in this deal about professional, about the licensing across the country for people who have firearms, the way that I feel about that is that, number one, the only people that need to have firearms in this country is basically law enforcement and the military. It's not necessarily the people. It's basically the training that they are getting, because law enforcement and the military are professionals. They know what to do. But as, you know, in the Constitution of the United States, it clearly says that citizens are able to bear arms. And if somebody comes to my front door, you know, I'm allowed to take them out and terminate them if I'm in fear of my life in Indiana,
yeah,
in Indianapolis.
Tim, I respect everything you're saying. I respect that. I think we're getting a little off topic here. I have all the questions you have brought up. Why aren't we doing something about it? I think
exactly, Wendy.
Those are the great questions. I don't think we know exactly what to do. We're going to put you on hold. You can give your information to Kevin. Appreciate all
Thank
your
you,
information.
Tim.
We've asked this, you know, how do you recognize somebody is about to explode? And then if they're not doing something, you can't just call authorities. Maybe family members know, but there are just so many variables that I don't know how to solve this. Tim raises some great questions, but we all have them.
I've told you this before. There's a neighbor kid of ours, lives a couple blocks away. He's lived in the house for 5 or 6 years. Every time I see this kid, he's torturing either other kids in the neighborhood or animals. He's throwing rocks at squirrels. He's got a stick that he's chasing somebody with. And I always say to my wife, that kid's going to snap. That kid, at some point in that kid's life, you're going to hear about this kid in a newspaper or radio or television. And there's zero that we can do about it. What can we do about it?
So you're living your own question then, aren't you?
Yeah, every day. Every time I see this kid...
Hasn't he injured someone or something? Because
nothing out of the ordinary, just stuff that you could write off as, you know, kids fighting and stuff like that. But I don't know what to do about this. And the last time we talked about this kid, people go, oh, you got to go to the parents. I know the parents. The parents will laugh it off and go, okay, he's just being a kid.
Or they'll get mad at you.
Right. They,
you know, some parents are not willing to admit that maybe there are some difficulties going
right.
on, but maybe they really don't see it.
Right.
I see, and
so that's just one instance. Who doesn't know somebody like that? And sometimes it's a kid, sometimes it's an adult. Everyone knows somebody like that. But I'm telling you, once you call, you make that phone call to the authorities and tell them your story, they'll just go, "All right, well, let us know if something happens." They can't just pull in a guy for being weird.
Well, you know, we got a text a while ago from 708, and this is a very interesting thing to discuss. The question is, do you view everyone that commits a violent or mean act as being mentally unbalanced?
No.
If there are good people, I'm sorry, the texts are coming in so quickly. If there are good people out there, can't they just turn evil? What about that 9-year-old? I completely lost this. But it's like there are evil people that do this and it's premeditated
right.
and they want to do it. And then there is someone who snaps. I don't know how you determine which is which.
Right. Both are awful, but
yeah.
there is some separation.
We're going to take a quick break here, and then I have gone to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and there is a pamphlet that you can download or information, Active Shooter, How to Respond. It's kind of interesting. Maybe we should go over that next.
All right, let's do it. More of your calls as well. We're 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to those calls and texts. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. If you're just joining us, ugly reports out of San Bernardino, California, where a shooting, and they're still considering it, Steve, to be an active shooter, I believe, has taken down what we believe to be, we've been told from several sources, a dozen people right now, 20 plus injured. We're getting all those details, and we'll continue to work on the story as it develops. But a lot of calls coming in for us at 312-981-7200.
And also some things to do, according to the Homeland Security, here's exactly what it says, active shooter, how to respond.
This is just for people in the area? Like, should you be in a situation? Who's this for?
It's what you should know and do if there is an active shooter.
Okay.
Profile of an active shooter, An individual actively engaged in killing or attempting to kill people in a confined and populated area. In most cases, active shooters use firearms. There is no pattern or method to their selection of victims. I have heard, and we were talking to ABC News correspondent Kenneth Moten earlier, he mentioned soft targets. And it seems that the information I've been researching, it's you're supposed to try and get out of their way and evacuate, because it doesn't seem like they chase people. They're just kind of going through where they're going to go through,
right,
taking out these soft targets, people that are there. Active shooter situations are unpredictable. They evolve quickly. Typically, the immediate deployment of law enforcement is required to stop the shooting and mitigate harm to victims. That's their goal. Because active shooter situations are often over within 10 to 15 minutes before law enforcement arrives on the scene, individuals must be prepared both mentally and physically to deal with an active shooter situation.
Well, that's very easy to say, but think about it. You're going about a daily activity where you don't think somebody's going to be opening fire, and all of a sudden, even though it says to, you know your situation and stuff like that, nothing prepares you for something like that.
I know, so maybe this isn't a bad thing to be prepared. Here's good practices. Good practices for coping with an active shooter situation. Be aware of your environment and any possible dangers.
All right.
Pay attention. Be vigilant. All look right. around.
Although I do have to say, with all this that has happened over the last couple of years, I have been in situations, especially after the shootings in the Colorado theater, I've been in movie theaters where I think to myself, okay, there's an exit there, there's an exit there. Should something happen, I know where they are, I know how to get there.
Well, you did step two. Take note of the two nearest exits in any facility you visit.
Yeah,
I've done that a few times. Stepping over you to get outside.
Understandable.
If you are in an office, stay there and secure the door.
Instead of try to find an escape route?
Now that is interesting.
Yeah.
Kevin?
Can I just, isn't it really sad that...
It's come to this?
Yeah.
It's awful.
I had thought, at what point does this become standard training at work? Or at what point does this become standard training in our schools?
Instead of fire drills to have...
It's shooting drills.
Shooting drills. Yeah.
And it's already happening at schools.
I know.
I mean, Bill, when you and I went to elementary school, it was, tornado warnings. You'd have these civil defense drills,
right,
and you'd get in the hall and you'd put, you'd sit with your knees up and you'd put your head down. The fire alarm would happen. You wondered if there was really a fire, if some kid pulled it to get out of a test.
Right.
And now, if you're in an office, stay there and secure the door. That's good advice.
I guess so.
I mean, because you don't know where the shooter is or if there are many. So if you go out to explore.
Yeah, wouldn't your impulse be to try to
get
escape?
Out.
That would be the natural impulse, I would think.
If you're in a hallway, get into a room and secure the door. Again,
yeah.
This is from the Department of Homeland Security, DHS.gov.
We've been told by teachers when talking about this that a lot of schools have, and I won't go into details for two reasons. Number one, I don't remember all the details. But number two, I don't want to give the same ideas we gave last time, but they've said there's sometimes color coding systems or letter systems where they'll put a color on the door handle or a letter to let somebody know that there are people in there or the number of people.
I think each school has their
own system. Yeah.
And as a last resort, this is what to do in the case of an active shooter, good practices rather, for coping with an active shooter situation from the Department of Homeland Security. Here's as a last resort, which I think is crazy.
What?
Attempt to take the active shooter down. Here's why. This is where it's interesting, and think about this. When the shooter is at close range and you cannot flee, your chance of survival is much greater if you try to incapacitate him or her. I'm shook up about this because I wouldn't want to go after them, but if you're there and you really don't see there's any way you're going to survive,
why not take a chance?
Yeah.
But it fits, I know this is a strange analogy, but I'll make it anyway. It's the punching the shark analogy where they say if the shark is about to bite you, the best thing you could do is punch it, to shock it. It's almost that same kind of thing. It's like, at this point, I got to try something. I got to do something.
Just other things to do, evacuate, how to respond when an active shooter is in your vicinity. Quickly determine the most reasonable way to protect your own life. Remember that customers and clients are likely to follow the lead of employees and managers during an active shooter situation.
Yeah.
So try to evacuate, have an escape route, hide out. If evacuation is not possible, they say hide out. Blockade the door with heavy furniture.
That's a good move. I would think that's a very good move.
It's just silence your cell phone or pager. Honestly, I don't think I would think of that.
Yeah.
If the active shooter is nearby, lock the door, silence your cell phone and or pager. When was this written? Who has a pager anymore?
I don't think. Yeah, it's a while ago.
Turn off any source of noise, radios or televisions. Hide behind large items, cabinets, desks. Remain quiet. I would be screaming.
No.
You would have to hit me and then turn my phone off.
Right.
If evacuation and hiding out are not possible, remain calm. Couldn't do that
Impossible.
Either. Dial 911 if possible to alert police to the active shooter's location. If you cannot speak, leave the line open and allow the dispatcher to listen. These are pretty good tips.
Yeah.
Something that I haven't thought of before today.
Yeah.
And then take...
Go on. What's the
last
this
one? Is the last one. Take action against the active shooter. Again, this is from the Department of Homeland Security, DHS.gov. As a last resort and only when your life is in imminent danger, attempt to disrupt or incapacitate the active shooter by acting as aggressively as possible against him or her,
mm-hmm.
throwing items and improvising weapons,
mm-hmm.
yelling,
mm-hmm.
committing to your actions.
Right.
I guess if there's no way that you think you're going to get out.
It's just, you know, the unknown variable here is that every situation is so different and it's such a chaotic moment or two where you have to think as quickly as you can. And, you know, one wrong move is your last move. So even though these are very helpful hints, when it actually comes down to game time, you don't know what happens. It plays out in a million different ways.
But it's nice to be armed with the tools to, you sure. know, I really wouldn't have thought to turn my phone down. And, you know,
wouldn't
what
you
if
be
somebody's
on the
calling
phone?
Me you, saying, could you pick up a loaf of bread on your way home?
There's always that possibility. There's always that. All right, let's do this. We need to take a break. We'll talk to Ro and Anna and find out what they've got coming up next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.